This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. It is Monday, October the 23rd. That means it's Hockey Nights in Vegas grand prize winner announcement day here on the Big Show on TSN 1290. We'll do that at 7:15. Lots to get to after a busy sports weekend and lots of things to talk about. The Jets beat the Wild on Friday 4-3. They moved to 4-3 and had a practice day on Saturday. They were off yesterday. They'll get back at it today and then head to Pittsburgh for a Thursday night battle. Then they'll take on the Columbus Blue Jackets Friday night. And they'll come home and host the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion Penguins on Sunday night. Big week for the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers had an opportunity slip away or go wide right. Either way you want to look at it. After a loss to the Argos and a loss by the Calgary Stampeders at home and an Edmonton Eskimos forcing overtime and victory in OT in BC, it makes things really interesting in the West as we head into the final two weekends of the regular season with the Bombers hosting the BC Lions. We'll talk about that. The World Series has been decided!
Ooh.
Some of us knew this all along. Some of us didn't.
Ooh.
Gary, where are you now, Gary? Gary, you were right all along. I'm going to send this $5 to you, Gary. Canadian, that's about $3.48 US. Ian Mendez, Brian Munns, Marshall Ferguson, Adam Kimmelman, your NHL news and notes, and an hour of your phone calls all to come as well. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brendan Rewicki with you. Gentlemen, good morning. How was your weekend?
Morning, man. Weekend was pretty good. Thanks so much to the great folks over at Budget Rent-A-Car. It was a real full week, man. Full weekend. All kinds of fun and great sports stuff going on, both on the pitch or on the ice and watching on TV and stuff. So it was good. Outside of the Bomber defense, really still stings, man. Just watching them get carved up like that. But yeah, by and large, a fantastic weekend. Sort of the last, maybe the last hurrah for summer fall, too, huh? Seeing some snowflakes in the weather forecast upcoming.
Yeah, sure. I think my weekend, it started off at a high point and then just quickly crashed down after that.
Do tell.
Got the last golf game in Friday, and just I wore the Tiger Sunday red, and it paid off.
Or you spanked the senior Rewicki all over the place.
I wouldn't say spanked, but it was definitely a victory.
School bell rang.
Yeah, it was definitely once again Sunday red. It was predetermined before I even stepped out there onto the first. I parred the par 3 ninth at Pine Ridge. For the first time in my life.
First time ever.
Yep.
Seriously?
Never parred before.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
The par 3 ninth. Yeah, that's the uphill.
230 uphill.
Into the wind crown, somehow every single time. Green, yeah. Green that levels off in every single direction. Finally pulled it off.
Wow.
And then, Saturday, Bombers fiasco. And then Sunday, my pro line ticket Sunday somehow ended 5 minutes into the games.
I believe that. Sunday. How, like, four teams shut out, three teams, 10 or less points.
Disgusting.
The NFL's got a bit of a problem.
I was going to say, they have a huge problem. Yeah, because you know why? Their games suck.
Yeah.
There's a serious, serious talent disparity in terms of some teams just being awful at football and the teams that beat them being just kind of okay.
It's kind of weird, huh?
Yeah. I don't know what you guys are talking about. The Bears-Carolina game was classic football.
What did Trubisky, like, 4-for-7, and they win the game? Carolina had 38 minutes time of possession.
5 first downs.
I think they had 5 first downs total. And they won.
That's shocking.
That is sheer dominance. They won. That is a team firing on all cylinders. Watch out, NFL.
It's actually weird, though, because I think teams – I saw this stat, and I think teams that have completed – less than 7 passes in a game since 1970 are like 18-1-1. Like the win percentage is just through the roof. Like it makes no sense at all, but somehow those teams always end up winning.
It might suggest a strong run game, but 5 first downs would vanquish that thought in a hurry.
Do you know what's weird is the Atlanta Falcons. Like the same roster almost, the same if it just –
I'm watching that game last night, and I've caught two of their other games, including the one against Green Bay, and it just – what's going on there, I have no idea. And it honestly, I don't – coaching has a lot to do with it, but the play calling and the execution of it, just the simplest things from a team that was so dominant last year that if it's third and eight and you throw a pass 6 yards and don't get – it just – Matt Ryan looks off. I don't know. That's weird. We'll delve in a lot to the NFL and some of the storylines that came out of yesterday. But let's go back to Friday night, gentlemen. The Winnipeg Jets and Connor Hellebuyck, who gets his fourth win in a row. The Jets get their fourth win of the season. They beat the Minnesota Wild 4-3. They have a 2-0 lead. They give that up. They go down 3-2. And then once again, they think they tie it. They didn't. And then they tie it in what has to be... And I was at the game and just hovering around different hockey people, even walking to my car and hearing that shot from Patrick Laine was an absolute bullet. And then Blake Wheeler coming through with his first goal of the season after having one denied. They win 4-3. They move to 4-3 on the season, and we'll just delve into that first and get your thoughts on the game.
Well, the game overall was uplifting, I'm going to say. I'm going to phrase it like that first. Just the rebound from Columbus. And again, we get an introduction or another presentation of the spectrum that the Winnipeg Jets can cover. Right? They looked as fast as the Wild. They were able to keep up and all the rest of it. On the broadcast, they said that Laine blast went off a Koivu stick. And I went back and forth. I couldn't tell for sure, but it might have.
I thought 100% for sure it did.
Could have ramped up over that, yeah. But nonetheless, it was one heck of a shot. And that sauce pass by Connor to Blake Wheeler for the eventual game winner was a thing of beauty. The brilliance of Nikolaj Ehlers is still what pops off the ice the very most to me. It's just what he does in so many controlled entries, and when he has the puck on a stick in the offensive zone, he's an absolute treat. I don't understand... for the life of me, how that hit by Stewart completely in the numbers and nameplate of Josh Morrissey. How in the world did that was that allowed to slip, and then the goal being scored? It was just that was kind of strange. And I'm watching a bunch of the different games, guys. I'm noticing. I wonder if other people are. Are they the refs letting a lot of interference go? That whole chip and chase.
It
and
drives like me
Stewie,
bananas.
Stewie should still be in the league this year with the amount of interference they're allowing, specifically this year, right? In years past, we've seen it called at a real high rate. I don't know if it's something to counter the lack of slashing allowed or whatever, but it just seems to me the interference being run in the league is remarkable. I loved Andrew Kopp and his line had a fantastic shift in the third period that really stood out for me. Sean Mathias's hands are... tragic. The comparisons to James Wright are really quite remarkable. And the Wheeler disallowed goal, why were people up in arms? There's no question his right skate caught Dubnyk and kind of spun him in the crease there. But the fury of Paul Maurice was, if you PVR'd the game, is worth going back and watching 3-4 times. Yeah, those two words he's really fond of when he's angry, where he just goes into this... It off! Like just repeatedly, right? It's pretty funny.
He did say post game that's a penalty. the hit on Morrissey's a penalty every time, and he said that's not goaltender interference. Those were his thoughts.
I could buy that. I could buy that. You know, I don't even. Did we really learn anything new about this team from the game?
No.
They can play like that. That's the Jets. Yeah. That's the Jets. Like sometimes they'll play like that, and. You had another penalty, another power play goal against. You had the top six and the skill level that they have, which is as good as any
anybody.
Team in the NHL. Yeah. And Hellebuyck was all right. He was okay, right? Like I don't know. Like I don't feel it. Just kind of felt like a lot of the games we see out of the Jets where you kind of feel good after the game, but again, nothing from the bottom six. I mean, Kyle Connor is. The more you watch him play, think that there was no need for him to go to the Moose to begin the season anyway. But he's here now, and he does fit. Like he clearly belongs wherever he eventually ends up going through the rest of the season. He's going to be somewhere in the top six, top nine
scenario here moving forward.
He has to stay in the spot that he is.
Well, and I've heard this before. Like, did you see this from him in the preseason, though? Like, a lot of people have said that, well, what does five games mean? And I said, well, I didn't really see this. That first period since his call-up, I didn't like. But that whole line and the whole team was hemmed in against Columbus. The second period, he seemed to calm down and relax. And the third period and Friday's game, to me, I like everything I see from him. I just didn't see that in the preseason a lot.
I liked his preseason.
You did, eh?
More than you, I think a lot of people did. Or at least more than you guys did, I know. But
are we supposed to think he picked all that up in four games with the Moose?
That's the only thing I kind of have a problem with.
Yeah.
No, but also going down and then getting called back up, like that mentally has something to do with it. Like maybe, you know, you go through camp and you're expecting, as every player is, to make the team, and you don't. And you go down for 2 weeks. You have a little bit of success. You get a call. Maybe you're just more relaxed or more. I don't know. I'm not.
You can't say because you didn't get the call up to begin.
Yeah,
he wasn't
exactly.
Here to begin
he didn't
with.
Get the start of the year.
In reality, it's kind of a moot point. He's here now, and he's here to stay.
And in reality, he didn't spend enough time with the upper echelon talent that he's with right now.
Yeah, and I mean, so if you're looking for, I guess, positive developments that happen, you know, once Matty Perreault does come back and Adam Lowry as well. This team will become deeper and will become more rounded. It's just you just kind of hope that with, you know, some of these games coming up, that they can kind of weather the storm a little bit, maybe be a couple games above 500 by the time Perreault gets back, and then you should, at that point, you know, see a third line that can contribute for you offensively, that can maybe even consistently win the territorial battle and just little things like that. But, yeah, I didn't really feel like I learned a whole lot about the team from the game against Minnesota. It's a game that I feel like we've seen a lot over the past couple of years.
You know, I was walking out with Paul Edmonds, and we were talking about it, and we sort of did the same thing. A lot of people were doing the same. What we're doing is, it's good. It's good they won, and it's good they beat Minnesota, and Minnesota had some injuries. But like Paul emphasized, he goes, it's the fashion in which they won. And he said, especially like, this is a team that you go up 2-0, it's tied, they go down 3-2, and you really don't, you're like, this is a film we've seen before. And then they tie it, but yet it's called back. And you wonder how that response is going to be. And I thought, you know, Paul, that's a good point. Like, this is a team that it did pull out a win that historically, if they hadn't, it wouldn't have surprised me. So they did that, but it wasn't like anything dominant or they didn't turn a corner. You make a great point in my mind because I agree is that it's good. They did it, but have we really learned anything or is anything different?
I think what Wicks is saying there, what most people think when they watch that is it's more about the lack of consistency here. You know, it's great you pull this out after the dog crap that you laid on the game a couple days ago against Columbus. Now what's next? Like, can you string 4, 5, 6 of these types of games together? That's the big question, right? Or are you going to continue to cover the spectrum where you have just an absolute atrocity on the ice to something that looks like a competitive, strong team that could possibly vie for the playoff line? Because that spectrum being covered, it's swinging wildly back and forth, somehow shockingly, 7 games into the season.
We'll get to Brendan Lemieux's debut in the next segment and talk about the bottom six again. And we'll talk top six as they lead the team in scoring. We'll get into the stats now that it's been a couple of weeks. That and more to come on The Big Show this morning, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba. Today, text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Till, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on The Big Show, TSN 1290. More on the Jets coming up, Blue Bombers, Argos. We're going to get into that next segment. We'll talk about the World Series, and we'll have our grand prize winner, our 4th of 5 for Hockey Nights in Vegas, coming up at 7:15 this morning on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Back to the Jets win over the Minnesota Wild on the weekend, 4-3, improving the record to 4-3. Brendan Lemieux made his NHL debut. Father Claude and his family were in the stands. Claude looks like he could still play.
Oh, you could get the whole bunch of snarly still. He might have trouble keeping up, I suppose, but I loved him back in his day, man.
You did, eh?
Oh, yeah.
Did you love Claude Lemieux?
No, mainly because he was like, when I would have been a teenager, he was with the Devils, and it was the Devils-Flyers rivalry. So, although I did kind of respect him. My old man used to call me Claude because I would show up in the playoffs, but he'd get all pissed. He's like, well, you play like that the other like 90% of the season, you idiot.
Your dad calling you out for not showing up in the regular season. As long as he didn't call you Thomas Vanek.
He defensively, I thought, was just, I loved the way when he shut someone down. I just loved when he'd do that.
Brendan Lemieux makes his NHL debut, plays 9 minutes, 53 seconds, has two hits in the game, and was put out there with about three and a half minutes to go in a 4-3 game. Your thoughts on his debut?
Yeah, that was seemed a little, that was interesting. Paul Maurice, some of the guys that he had out there late, but yeah, he looked good, right? I love the agitation, the shenanigans around the net. I absolutely love that. And he drew a penalty. Like, that's, as an agitator, that's exactly what you're supposed to do, right? Just keep things going a little bit after the echo of the whistle, cause disturbance for the other goaltender and all the rest of that sort of stuff that comes into play, draw penalties. So I thought he did a good job. And he looked good skating, like he fit in well. And you just think, you look, project to when the Jets are healthy and what that fourth line might be. I don't know how quickly Matt Hendricks is going to come back or if it's going to be Lowry, but say Lowry's back in the third line, and if the fourth line's going to be centered by Kopp until Hendricks is ready, it's not hard for me to imagine a Lemieux, Kopp, Armia type of a situation on the fourth line. That sort of level of, like, the Jets need a guy like that, or maybe it's just that I really like teams that have a guy like that. And production would be great, but just the sort of a bee in the bonnet of the way he plays, I like that a lot. I like watching it.
Yeah, I think mine and maybe a lot of people's main concerns would he be able to toe the line? And because we saw last year the amount of penalty minutes he had with the Moose, he just wouldn't be able to transfer that over to the NHL. But like Troy said, if your agitator draws a penalty, job done. Like, you can almost cancel out any other contributions that he makes or that player makes for the rest of the game. You get this team a power play, you give Laine 60 seconds to work his magic there, job complete by the fourth line. Hey, I was kind of pleasantly surprised. I thought he had a bit more speed than I was expecting. He was moving pretty decently out there. So it was a fine debut for him. It was a good, a step in the right direction to at least see that he can, or at least has the ability to instigate, but still pull the reins back a little bit and not get his own team in trouble.
The win moves the Winnipeg Jets back into the wild card after 7 games. They're 4-3. They have 8 points. Colorado's 4-4. Calgary's 4-4. Anaheim's 3-3-1. Minnesota gets a big, big road win Saturday in Calgary off back-to-backs, leaving Winnipeg in at Cowtown beating the Flames. Let's go to the stats, gentlemen, and it's been a couple weeks now. And, of course, everything's rolling along at the top. Nikolaj Ehlers, 6 goals, 8 points in 7 games. Scheifele has 8 points in 7 games. Wheeler has 8 points in 7 games. Patrick Laine has 6 points in 7 games. Dustin Byfuglien, 5 assists in 5 games. Brian Little, 4 points in 7. Perreault, 3-5. Kulikov has 3 points in 5, and then it starts to go down to where we are always talking about. Brandon Tanev has 1 point in 7 games. Armia has 1 in 5. Andrew Kopp has 1 in 7. Mathias, no points in 7 games. Nick Patan, no points in 6 games. Marco Dano, no points in 5 games. Adam Lowy, 0 in 4. Still, if there is an issue with this team, it's that production from the bottom six, as they like to call it. Tanev, Kopp, Armia, Lemieux, Mathias, Patan were the bottom six in Friday's game. Your impressions of them?
Well, it's a huge issue, and the impressions aren't really very good. Outside the line, or the Kopp line, Tanev, Armia had a real nice shift in the third period. Mathias misses another glorious opportunity, just sort of wrestling with the puck, pretty much right in the paint there. But the fact of the matter is that for zero, for none of the guys that occupy bottom six spots to have a single point 5-on-5 at this point in time, that's pretty much mind-blowing. And it's like something – can you really wait? What is it going to be, another 3 weeks until Perreault's ready? 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks? Can you wait? I'm just not sure. And to some degree, it has to contribute to the lack of consistency, although it's – maybe that's not accurate because the Jets, we saw this game against Minnesota, if they can carry that game going forward, they're going to be okay sort of thing, right? The Columbus game, that's where you need maybe some help from your bottom six from a production standpoint. But so long as, you know, however you slice and dice, you need, if you're going to be a playoff team, there's no way in the world you can get by with such a there's no one in this NHL with such a distinction between the top six and bottom six. No one even comes close to that level of difference here. So whatever needs to be put into effect here, I don't think you can wait till Perreault comes back. And I don't know how many games it's going to take. Are we going to go to the end of this month where none of the bottom six has any 5-on-5 points before something is done? But something at some point in time, real soon here, needs to be done.
We'll get into the goaltending, talk Connor Hellebuyck as the program rolls on as well. But the Bombers take one on the chin. 29-28 in Toronto on the weekend. We'll talk about Blue Bombers next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You wanted it back and we caved as TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. The Man Cave or the Mam Cave come with either a $500 men's or women's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports, a pizza night for 10 courtesy of Boston Pizza, two tickets to an upcoming UFC fight night, which is December 16th at Bell MTS Place, the Man Cave. The Mam Cave has two tickets to see Shania Twain's Now Tour, May 13th at Bell MTS Place. Both come with a Winnipeg Jets guys or girls night out, including two tickets to an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey puck party. And both come with a Rinkwater Nice Rink, Rink in a Box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. Select your cave of choice online at tsn1290.ca and we'll randomly draw a winner for each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and tsn1290.ca. 34 minutes past the opening hour. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, and we'll get into the Bombers now. Gentlemen, they go to Toronto. They're down 14-7 after the first quarter. They tie it going into the half. They outscore the Argos 11-6 in the third quarter, outscored 9-3 in the fourth quarter, and with a chance to win it on a Justin Medlock field goal, he is wide right. And the Bombers lose 29-28 to the Argos. Your thoughts on the game and the loss?
Well, 572 yards allowed by the Bomber defense. That it was just god-awful. Ricky Ray was doing what he wanted, and also right there with Ricky Ray, the James Wilder just running rough shot, catching everything, running was an absolute force against the Bombers. He had over 200 yards of combined yards for the Argos. Time of possession, Toronto just destroyed the Bombers with 37-55 possession. Toronto lost the turnover battle 2-0, and you just don't win games when you lose the turnover battle in the CFL. The percentages are remarkable against that. Even sacks-wise, the Bombers with 2 sacks, Toronto with none. But it just wasn't enough. And I suppose that, you know, how much – you got to be careful in these situations, I believe, to not change your storyline of the game too much, because simply if Justin Medlock hits that 39-yard field goal, how differently are you presenting this? You dare say that the Bombers escaped with victory had he have hit that field goal. It looked like he had it, and the wind pushed it out a little bit. Nonetheless, you got to hit a 39-yard field goal. He knows that. And he's just his struggles continue. At one point during the game, I believe he was 9 of his last 15. So where exactly Justin Medlock is as the playoffs come near is a little bit of concern. But the bottom line is that Bomber defense was absolutely horrible. Myself and plenty of other people were concerned coming into training camp as to what that defense was going to bring to the table, how much of a hindrance was it going to be to the success of this team. And it's not looking real good here coming into the playoffs. To give up 572 yards and the Argos moving the ball at will, that's what stands out the very most.
Yeah, and if Medlock makes the kick, the Bombers still give up almost 600 yards of offense, so it doesn't really matter too much either way. That was embarrassing. It was an embarrassing, embarrassing effort on defense. There's just no other way to put it. I mean, there weren't even guys anywhere within 5 yards of receivers at a lot of points during the game. Outside of T.J. Heath, you know, there was just nobody really covering anybody, and it was so simple, and I thought it was perfectly encapsulated by the fact that Mark Trestman showed maybe the utmost level of disrespect you can towards another team's defense by not even hesitating to go for it on third down every single chance the Argos got.
And I believe there was 5 times during the course of the game. And you know what, Wicks? I don't know if that's what it was or if Trestman, because he's not like a Chris Jones kind of cowboy guy. And I was talking with this with Wolby during the game, where I think they probably have a chart and a percentages, like some sort of analytics approach to, if it's 3rd and 5, we have this is our percentage, and especially on the 12-yard line. Like Ricky Ray gets sacked on that one, 3rd and 5 from the 12, Bomber 12-yard line that they went for it. But even if you don't get that, and then you still have them pinned like that, it's interesting. You just don't see – teams don't typically do that. And I wondered if it was analytics-based or not, much disrespect.
It could have been, right? And these were 3rd and 5. It wasn't like 3rd and 1, 3rd and 2 sorts of things. Like it was where you had to pass it to get a first down. And they probably did have it analytically based, and it said, we're playing the Bombers defense, 100% guaranteed we're going to get 5 yards eventually on these guys. I thought it was more of a we just don't fear this defense at all. Huh. Like they didn't, and why should they? Why would Ricky Ray be scared of throwing against the Bombers' secondary?
Well, the other thing Trestman did was ride James Wilder Jr., and I know that sounds simple to say because he had so much success, but that's not a Trestman coach team either. He loves spreading the ball around, and he loves to keep you guessing. The other trait that he brought in that's not usually accustomed to his philosophy was he just kept giving him the ball.
The Bombers' D has proven. You know, after they resurrected Jerome Messam's career, you got a guy that's younger, faster, equally as strong as Jerome Messam back there in Wilder. And it's a bad foreshadowing for what is very likely to happen if they win their first playoff game at home and go into Calgary.
And if I remember correctly, it was Sam Hurl who was the linebacker when Jerome Messam resurrected his career.
That is correct. Who registered his first tackle in the fourth quarter with 7 minutes and 40 seconds left.
Impossible.
We were isolating him during the game. And you know, we were saying that we feel bad talking about him in this manner, but there's just no way in the world that you see, like in that game, Bear Woods, the game previous to that, Solomon Elamimian. Everyone's talking about what Singleton is doing in Calgary. You have to be an impactful player at that position, and how easily he gets washed away upon first contact and first block, just negating his presence whatsoever on the field, it's of huge concern. And they don't have a chance until they make an improvement in that position.
There were 2 or 3 instances for sure. There might have been more where Taylor Loeffler, from the safety position, made the tackle near the line of scrimmage before the middle linebacker.
That's right, yeah.
How in the world is that even possible? And it wasn't a case of, you know, he got caught with an offensive lineman, you know, in the second level. It was just Loeffler was quicker, read the play faster, was more athletic. The Bombers have absolutely nothing at the middle linebacker spot, and that's you have the secondary concerns with the passing game, but if you compound that with the fact that you could run the ball at will as well, it doesn't really leave the Bombers a whole lot of options defensively.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Troy and Brandon, we're talking about the Bombers' 29-28 loss to the Toronto Argos on the weekend. Ricky Ray hits a milestone versus the Bombers. He now has 60,000, becomes the fourth quarterback in CFL history to pass for 60,000 yards in his career. Let's get back into the Justin Medlock situation. And it goes back to the BC game, the struggles in Edmonton a couple weeks ago. The BC game, I believe, is the second game of the season, or somebody missed a 50-yarder. How big of a concern is this heading towards the playoffs?
I think it has to be a concern. You got a guy who was basically like a machine upon arrival here in Winnipeg, taken for granted. He'd stroll out onto the field. It didn't really matter how long it was, and everyone just felt like he was going to make it. Fans, coaches, players, it's just sort of the way it is. Right now he's sitting in a funk where he's hit only seven of his last 13 attempts. Now he's had a couple of them in that time frame over 50 yards, but he's also had misses of 40, 32 on the extra point, 40 and 39. So there's definitely concern there. And, you know, Walby was saying, hey, I 100%, no question he comes out of this and all the rest of it. But this is, like, Justin Medlock, the CFL has never witnessed him struggle like this. And sometimes, like, these things, you know, adversity and how an athlete deals with it goes a long way in defining an athlete. And there's nothing shocking about the adversity that he's dealing with here, but we've never witnessed him pull himself out of a funk where it starts to get into his head a little bit. And he was very straightforward a couple weeks ago, or maybe a week ago, in the Winnipeg papers about just how he felt and his emotions. And there was some real sort of, like he was being affected by these misses. So this most recent miss here as a game winner, it's going to affect him, and he just hoped that he pulls out of it and starts basically gluing his confidence back together to get to the machine that we saw before this.
Yeah, and look, he could come back against BC the next game and go 3-for-3, and this is basically, you know, pushed to the back burner almost immediately. But the fact is, Justin Medlock gets paid way more than any other kicker in the CFL. He has to outperform every other kicker in the CFL. Like, when you're getting that much money, he has to be the best kicker in the league, and he has to do it by a fairly wide margin, and he isn't. And when you have a defense that's struggling as much as they are, you almost kind of need every single dollar that you could get to try and improve that side of the ball. So he just flat out has to be better. He's missing way too many of these kind of low 40s, high 30 field goals that, like Troy said last year, you'd trot him out there and you'd change the channel before it goes to commercial, because there's no point of watching it when the outcome is basically predetermined.
So how do you fix this for him?
Well, there's only one man who can fix it, and it's Justin Medlock. That's it. You just have to hope that, and it's, you know, it would be 98% mental. So whatever he's doing, he's got to. And unfortunately, if I recall during the broadcast, that 39, the game winner was into the wind. So he could have hit that ball exactly where he wanted to hit it. And it looked to me like it was between the uprights upon contact. We don't know where he was initially aiming it. You know, if there's no wind there, it looks to me like that's a good kick. The wind seemed to push it left to right and cause him to miss that. So he could have hit that kick perfectly as he wanted to and just missed out by the hands of Mother Nature there with the wind. So it just adds up to something else in his head sort of to deal with, and he has to wrestle his way through it. And the thing is, the key to that is that you've only got 2 weeks to do that before the playoffs start, right, where you need perfection from your guy.
So the loss itself hurts a little bit more because the Calgary Stampeders lost to the Saskatchewan Roughriders and the Edmonton Eskimos with less than 30 seconds to go tie the game in BC and then win it in overtime. So the Winnipeg Blue Bombers come home to host the BC Lions this Saturday. They're 11-5. Edmonton's nipping at their heels at 10-6. Saskatchewan's 9-7, and Calgary's 13-2. The Saskatchewan Roughrider game, with Jerron Carter playing DB and then returning an interception.
It's like it was written in heaven.
Like, well, which heaven?
Disney,
well, which heaven
Disney
is that?
Movie.
Depends on what kind of life you want to live. Because if Jerron Carter is... Well, I'm not going to go there. But,
I found myself cheering for him.
A lot of people did. Like, a lot of people were hoping that he would do well. And he did do well as a DB.
He did.
It doesn't seem as crazy as... Like, I didn't think he would be absolutely lit up. But I didn't think he would return and get it. I didn't think he'd get a pick, let alone return it for a TD.
I thought he was truly capable of anything. That whole catch, that any ball sent his way, if he knows the ball's coming, that it's going to be trouble, because this catch radius is going to be superior to most out there receivers. And it ended up the interception really wasn't that at all, right? It was just a poor throw where or a guy wasn't where he's supposed to be sort of thing. But just – and even his patience in the return, right? Typically being on the field against either special teams or defensive players, and then he's out on the field with a bunch of offensive players in the pick six, and you saw how patient he was, and he just weaving his way through and threading his way through all the rest of it. It's – what do you do now if you're Saskatchewan Chris Jones, like, going forward? And Chris Jones would never the level of dumb – dare I say, by some of the media thinking Chris Jones is doing this to teach him a lesson or as a disciplinary thing. No, you would never, a coach would never harm his own team by exacting discipline on a player. He has to have thought that Daron Carter has the skill set for this, and you just kind of wonder going forward, like, do you really take away the most wicked weapon that you have for your offense, and now you're going to focus things defensively? Like, what do they do going forward, and how much maybe two-way does Daron Carter gets involved? It's one of the great storylines here in the CFL.
And the thing with him playing DB, too, is that if he gets his mitts on the ball, there's probably a 95% chance it's ending up as six.
Yeah.
Because you have the offensive guys out there who don't really know what they're doing, and you put them in special team scenarios, and Daron Carter can take it to the house at an instance, and you put him out there with space to work with. I mean, that return's as good as you get too.
Yeah,
you know, the pick is one thing, but that return is that's special stuff there. So that's kind of that's an interesting balancing act you have to kind of play a little bit there if you're Chris Jones.
The results from the weekend obviously make things a lot more interesting this weekend and next in the Western Conference or the Western Division in the Canadian Football League. More on the CFL coming up at 8 o'clock when Marshall Ferguson joins us. Up next, we'll talk some sports news and notes, including the upcoming World Series, which starts tomorrow in Los Angeles. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the perfect four menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your station's always free on the iHeartRadio app. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Ian Mendez is going to kick off the Royal Sports Power Hour with us next. And, of course, our fourth of five grand prize winner for Hockey Nights in Vegas will be drawn and announced at 7:15 today, right here on The Big Show on the weekend. I was really nervous. And I purposely, after the Bomber game, went and worked out. And I was done working out. It was about five to game time, I'll call it. Yankees, Astros. And I look at the phone. There's a text from Westwood. Yo, loser. Well, maybe not loser, but I knew what it meant.
Yo, JT. I was inviting him to dance.
You want some action on this? This game seven, yeah, seventh
make it
heaven.
Fun. Yeah, little fiver action.
And before I could type the word "done" in all caps, I made sure I had $5, and then I sent "done." Yankees and Astros game seven, back and forth. And really an outstanding play by Bregman to home plate with Brian McCann, to me, was one of the big plays of the series. But it was a great series. The Yankees gave the Astros more than I thought they'd have, being a wild card team. It goes to seven games, and the Astros move on to take on the Los Angeles Dodgers in the World Series. Your thoughts on the Yankees and the Astros?
Yeah, I agree. Where I think most people watching were just pleasantly surprised. And what I've with the level of success by the Yankees, and what I thought was really neat, just paying attention, following Twitter and listening to people talk, were people who traditionally have hated the Yankees for their entire lives all of a sudden started taking to this team, right? Because this isn't your dad's Yankees team that's got a bunch of bloated all-stars on there in the back end nine of their glorious careers. This is a bunch of young up-and-comers, and they were a lot of fun to watch, a real sort of gutsy group. And so I just think it was neat how listening to sort of the mood or the vibe of the Yankees alter to some degree. Now, maybe that'll shift away here as the days pass between this, and they'll get settled back into some level of hate for the Yankees coming into next season. But a team to look out for over the next few years, for sure. And ultimately, I just the sexiness of Dodgers Yankees in the World Series would have been awesome. But having said that, there ain't nothing wrong with a little bit of Keuchel and Kershaw to open things up in the World Series. It should be a beauty.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are on the Yankees train right now because they did things the right way. That'll change in about a year when Bryce Harper signs a $50 million a year deal. Enjoy this year, and maybe next year too. They might not get too crazy, but 2019, everything will be back to normal. But I think it's fair to say the two best teams are in the World Series.
I'd probably go.
Although I guess Cleveland probably, but Houston's right there. So baseball wise, I think this is the matchup you probably hope for with the final four teams that were left in there, purely from a, I guess, talent against talent scenario. Although the Yankees-Dodgers does have just some kind of sex appeal that unfortunately the Astros don't bring.
It starts tomorrow night, game one, in Los Angeles at Dodger Stadium. Who do you like in this World Series?
Oh, I think you got to go Dodgers, don't you?
No, I don't.
I know you don't like it, but yeah, the way the Dodgers look, like Dodgers of midsummer, right? Yeah. That's just some sort of an unstoppable force at this point in time, so I got to go with La La Land.
Yeah, I enjoy watching both teams, but I would definitely side with the Dodgers.
I think that Verlander and Keuchel, how the Yankees series went is exactly what I feared. I thought Keuchel has run really good game in him, and I thought another one he would struggle. I have full faith in Verlander. The bullpen is what worries me for the Astros, but I think the Astros can out-hit the Dodgers, even though the Dodgers are a very good hitting team. It sizes up to what I think should be a very good World Series and probably go six, maybe seven games. I hope it's a sweep, but
Careful what you wish for, baby.
Nothing beats a Game 7. I always, even for teams I'm cheering for, I will always cheer for the Game 7 will trump whatever team I'm cheering for. So Game 7, sign me up.
You? How many games?
I think the Dodgers win in five.
So we have two guys going with the Dodgers and one with the Astros. And there's five Canadian dollars that are sitting in front of me right now. May have to double down a little bit. We'll see how the week unfolds and delve more into the series tomorrow as well as it gets started. World Series, Dodgers and Astros starts tomorrow. We'll talk some more sports in general around the league when Ian Mendez joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon. The Big Show, TSN 1290. And the Royal Sports Power Hour. In our next segment, we will announce our fourth grand prize winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas. We'll also qualify somebody for our fifth and final draw on November the 6th. Brian Munns, Jets analyst, will join us at the bottom of the hour in NHL news and notes, all to come as well. But yes, in our next segment, our fourth of five grand prize winner will be announced for Hockey Nights in Vegas. So Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, kicking off the Royal Sports Power Hour with our good friend, Mr. Ian Mendez from TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Good morning, Ian. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing terrific. How are you today?
We're doing very well. Interested in getting your impressions on the start of the season for the Ottawa Senators.
Well, they've only lost, they've played eight games, and they've only lost one of them in regulation time. You know, so they picked up points in seven of eight games. And, for a team that is painted as super boring, I think, by the average hockey fan, they've had three different games this year where they've scored six goals, including Saturday night against Toronto. And I think that was that's a real statement game because as much as many people don't want to admit it, the Maple Leafs have become an elite team in the National Hockey League, and they've done so with a very dangerous offense. And that game on Saturday was Ottawa's system and structure up against Toronto's speed and skill. And for the better part of three periods, for 2.5 periods, Ottawa's system and structure beat out Toronto's speed and skill. And Ottawa was able to generate scoring chances and score some goals on their own. As I mentioned, they got to 6 on Saturday night. So I think that this is as good a start as you could have expected. I think there was always a fear in everyone's mind that there would be some sort of hangover or lingering effect of this team going deep into the playoffs and trying to rev the motor back up this year, that they would miss Carlson for the first few games of the season. How would they be doing? I think after 8 games, to get points in 7 of them, I think Ottawa fans should be pretty happy.
6 points in his 3 games, all assists since the return of Erik Karlsson. He doesn't look like he's missed a single beat. And he said when he was injured, Ian, that like half of his ankle bone or something like that was removed. Was it really that dramatic, really that much removed?
Well, according to him, they shaved down the little bone on the side of your ankle that kind of juts out a little bit. I don't know the exact medical scientific term for that bone, but essentially the bone around your ankle. He says that they shaved off part of that, I guess, to help reattach some tendons to it. The odd thing is, he still says, guys, that right now it feels like there's an old, like a piece of leather that's floating around in his ankle as he's skating. He says it's not painful. It's just weird. And it's going to take him time, he says, to get accustomed to that. He said, look, this is just going to be my new normal. And once I get used to it, I'm probably not going to think twice about it, but it feels like there's a piece of leather in my ankle. And I thought, okay, well, this might be interesting. How's this guy going to come out of the gates in his first few games? Well, he had no points in his first game, but he played very well. And the last 2 games, he's got 3 assists in each of the 2 games. He's up to 6 points. And it's amazing that in 3 games, he's got 6 points. I remember thinking, when he played his first game, guys, Shane Gostisbehere from the Philadelphia Flyers had a 10-point lead on him. And I thought, wow, you know, Gostisbehere is a pretty good offensive defenseman. Is there a chance that Carlson gave up too much track here to Gostisbehere, that a 10-point cushion, Gostisbehere is going to end up beating him out for the defense scoring lead this season? And well, now a week later, Carlson's shaved that down significantly by picking up 6 points in his last 2 games. So it appears like it's all systems go for Ottawa, and he's a big reason why. I'm not sure they can beat the Maple Leafs on a Saturday night without Carlson in the lineup.
Well, that was a big game for them, for sure. Ian Menez from TSN 1200 joining us on the Big Show, 9 minutes past the hour. Ian, the Ezekiel Elliott situation has gotten to the point where we were talking a little bit last week, where do you just accept the 6 games so you're around come playoff time, or do you think he can keep pushing this back? Where does this sit right now for you, and where do you see it ending? And does it end with him playing every game this regular season in playoffs, or are they sort of pushing the envelope to maybe he has to sit out 6 games by week 12?
It's become the new Deflategate in terms of on again, off again, and I'm not trying to liken a potential case of sexual assault against over or under inflating a football by any means, but I think just the mechanism in which the NFL has tried to get this done appears to be sort of underhanded and nefarious, and that's the issue, right? I'm not suggesting at any point in time Ezekiel Elliott's innocent, but he does appear to have the right to have a fair hearing or a fair trial, so to speak, from the NFL. His insistence and his camp's insistence that he never got that, there appears to be some courts that agree with him. And this is the problem. It's like a ping pong match. And would you be surprised if tomorrow you read a story that says the NFL's suspension is back on and Ezekiel Elliott will not be able to play at Washington this week, and then 48 hours later, you're going to open up your phone and see that, well, another court has granted a stay, and now it's gotten to the point where it's sort of lost its, I think people don't care anymore. Honestly, I don't think the average football fan cares. They've become exhausted from this story. And it's unfortunate because, again, at the heart of this is a potential case of sexual assault. And I don't think at any point in our lives we should become exhausted about that storyline. But Ezekiel Elliott has basically been able to push and push and push forward. You're now at the midway point of the season, and he's probably thinking he can figure out a way to play the rest of the season. And boy, I don't know. I mean, there was a report this week that suggested perhaps the two sides were sitting down and looking at a compromise, and maybe they would say 3 games or 4 games. I don't know. I don't know what to think anymore. And I think anybody that sits here and tells you on whatever day we are, October 23rd, and tells you that they know definitively November 23rd what Ezekiel Elliott's going to be doing, I think they're lying through their teeth, because you have no idea which way this thing is going to go and which way the wind is blowing from a legal standpoint.
What's your biggest take so far on the MLB playoffs and your thoughts also on the World Series?
Well, I think I understand that there would have been a real sort of nostalgic feeling of a Dodger-Yankee World Series. I think we haven't had one since 1981. And there's basically been a whole generation or two that, you know, grew up unaware of a Dodger-Yankee rivalry, right? So I think from that perspective, that would have been really neat. But I love the Houston Astros story. I love Jose Altuve, who might be the most dynamic and electric and fun player in all of baseball right now. I love Justin Verlander. I've never understood, guys, how Justin Verlander never won a World Series with the Tigers, where you look at that team and you think, how did they have Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, Miguel Cabrera, like all in the prime of their career? They had Rick Porcello, who ended up winning a Cy Young. Like, they had all these pieces, and they somehow didn't win a World Series. And so here comes Verlander to Houston, and you're thinking this might be his best shot. So I love that angle, but I also like the LA angle. I think this is a team that they were historically good for the first 100 games of the season. Then it was almost like they had this out-of-body experience. They became historically bad, and I thought a lot of people figured by early September the Dodgers had fallen off a cliff and they were never going to get it back. So to see them kind of roll through the Diamondbacks and the Cubs in fairly easy fashion, I think they're the favorites. And as much as I love the Altuve story and I love the Verlander story, but I also love Clayton Kershaw. I think this guy has had some troubles in the postseason, but I think when we look back historically in 10 or 20 years from now, we're going to look back at the 4 or 5 years Clayton Kershaw has put together and think, man, that's one of the great runs in pitching history. And I can't wait to see him on the biggest stage here. I really can. I think the Dodgers back in the World Series for the first time in almost 30 years, it's going to be great. And I think this is going to be a pretty exciting World Series. And again, I understand that the Yankees, Dodgers, New York, LA thing would have been great. But, boy, I'm not sure exactly who I'm pulling for. I guess a part of me is thinking Houston because they've never won a World Series. But if LA can win their first World Series since 88, I think that's a pretty cool story too.
If the Dodgers win this series, you will never be on this program again, Ian. How dare you? How dare you? I'm just kidding. It's going to be a great series. I agree with you. And I guess we'll get your thoughts on that. And you know, Alex Cora is going to be the new manager of the Red Sox. How has this season been for Major League Baseball? And what do you think of these managers who are still working being named managers of other teams?
Yeah, it is a little bit of an odd one, right? I mean, it's not like you're going to think that that Cora is going to come into the World Series and his mind's going to be, you know, not necessarily on the task at hand. And I think we see that in the NFL too, right? Where sometimes that week before the Super Bowl, there's interviews and coordinators go off and they can end up being essentially hired by teams. So I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I think it's an interesting hire by the Red Sox as they go to Alex Cora as their new manager. And I'm not sure he knows what he's in for just from the expectations and the media and the fan base there. But that's going to be a really fun story. I think this has been a good year. I think for the most part, Major League Baseball, the record, the only issue I have with baseball this year, I mean, there's a ridiculous number of home runs, right? I mean, for a while there, we thought, my goodness, Giancarlo Stanton was going to take a run, and he did up until the final weekend at Roger Maris is 61 in a season, and Aaron Judge passed to Mark McGwire for the most home runs ever by a rookie, and there were some great home run numbers this season, but at the same time, there's always, I don't know about you guys, there will always be that little seed of doubt in the back of my mind. And I want this to be on the up and up. Baseball is one of my favorite sports on the planet. But I think it's become just like cycling, where somebody could be dominant now and win 4 or 5 Tour de France's in a row. What are you going to be thinking? 100% you're going to be thinking that the guy's cheating. And that's what I'm always worried about with baseball, is that I don't know that I can ever embrace it again, because you almost feel like you were hurt, you were cheated on, and now you're asked to love that same person back again. Well, there's going to be some serious reservations here moving forward. You're always going to have that thing in the back of your mind that, I don't know if I can ever really love this the way I used to. And that's what it is like for me in baseball, and I love it. But the home runs this season were so ridiculously off the charts, like setting a record for the most number of home runs, that I can't help but be a little bit suspicious that the entire season was somehow, not a sham, but somehow aided in some sort of underhanded way to get to that number of home runs.
Great stuff, Ian. We appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this and enjoy your week.
All right. Same to you guys.
Thanks so much, Ian.
Ian Mendez of TSN 1200 in Ottawa. Up next, we announce our fourth grand prize winner of Hockey Nights in Vegas on the Big Show and the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, and it is time as we are set to announce our fourth grand prize winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas.
Just trying to get this number thing going here.
We'll get the call out. As we dial in, we will take another qualifier today, our fifth and final draw coming up on November 6th, but right now, October the 23rd, is grand prize draw number four with Jim Toth, Troy Weston, and Brandon Ruwicki on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour.
Killer anticipation, man.
Heavy buildup.
It's going to voicemail, isn't it? Should we sing into the voicemail or something?
Yeah.
You carry a tune well.
I reached Patty. I'm sorry I missed your call. Please leave me a message and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
Record your message at the tone. After recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
Hi, Patty. This is Jim Toth from Jim Toth's office. Along with my assistants, Troy Westwood and Brandon Ruwicki, we're wondering if you could pick up at any point sometime today. We'd like to talk to you about something. It's not that serious. It's not that grave, but it is exciting. Thank you.
Patty!
Can you hit pound now?
No, that was pretty good. We'll stick with that.
Patty Coward is our next winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas. We are pumped to announce she is winner number four and the next person headed to Las Vegas this November. We're sending Patty and a guest to Las Vegas on November 9th to the 13th, where she'll watch the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Patty and her guest will be supplied with two hockey tickets, free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, from Park and Fly, with return airfare to and from Las Vegas and four nights accommodations at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino provided by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and will also throw in $1,290 cash for any extras she wants to take in while she's there. Congrats, Patty!
Woo!
Patty Coward.
How's
it? We're going to try and get a hold of you later this morning as well. There's still one more trip to win. Listen for your chance to qualify as weekdays at 7:15 and 8:15 a.m. right here on The Big Show, 12:15 p.m. on the Don Vito Roundtable with Mr. Kevin Olszewski, and then Andrew Husser-Patterson and Rick Ralph will have your final opportunity weekdays at 5:15 p.m. You can also watch for bonus chances on TSN 1290's Facebook page online. Fifth and final winner will be announced Monday, November 6th on The Big Show. Hockey Nights in Vegas, go all in. TSN 1290. For more info, visit TSN1290.ca. And speaking of that, we need another qualifier today. 12th caller through at 780-1290 will qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas.
TSN 1290 presents Hockey Nights in Vegas. Be the 12th caller right now at 780-1290 to instantly score a Jets Gear gift card and qualify for your chance to win one of five trips to Las Vegas to see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Las Vegas Knights and so much more. Compliments of RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals.
780-1290. If you are the 12th caller through, you will be our latest qualifier for Hockey Nights in Vegas. and you'll be in for our fifth and final grand prize draw in 2 weeks' time on Monday, November the 6th. Congratulations to our four previous winners, including today's winner, Patty Coward. If you know Patty, tell her we're trying to get a hold of her.
Yeah.
Right here on The Big Show. Just for qualifying today and right now, 12th caller through, 780-1290, you'll receive a Jets Gear gift card, as will our qualifier at 8:15 a.m. and all our qualifiers, including on the Don Vito Roundtable at 12:15 and the afternoon ride at 5:15.
Huh. All kinds of fun to be had.
$1,290 cash as well when you're down in Sin City. The Vegas Golden Knights are on a heater, but they need a goaltender.
Yeah, that's unfortunate.
They're down. I was wondering, and especially seeing what Antti Niemi did in Pittsburgh in a 7-1 loss, or didn't do, I should say, I'm wondering what the market would be for a Michael Hutchinson. And what the market would be to get him. I don't think it would be very much, but if the Jets were looking for something to augment the bottom six or a draft pick, would you unload Michael Hutchinson, bring Jamie Phillips up to the Moose, and let Comrie and Phillips carry the Moose season and go with Hellebuck and Mr. Steve Mason? Even though if an injury occurred, you'd be calling up probably Eric Comrie. Would you be fine with letting Michael Hutchinson go? Because I think there's a bit of a market out there right now with Vegas. I think Pittsburgh's looking for a backup.
You just wonder where Hutch fills in there, huh?
Yeah.
Like, where does he fit in with all the other goalies that are in the different organizations? But at what point in time do people stop giggling about Vegas?
Well, you know, I saw some of the discussion with some hockey people on the weekend as well, and they still aren't buying into the 6-1, and they're laying a lot into who they've been playing this year and where most of these points have been coming from. Who's our latest qualifier?
It's Arnold Trinidad.
Arnold Trinidad! Congratulations, sir. You are our latest qualifier on Hockey Nights in Vegas. Just for doing so, you get a Jet Skier gift card, and we'll do it again in the next hour. And we will once again like to congratulate Patty Coward, and we will continue to try and get a hold of her this morning to get her thoughts on winning Hockey Nights in Vegas, our fourth grand prize winner. Brian Munns is next on The Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN1290 and TSN1290.ca. Congratulations once again to Patty Coward, our latest winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas. She qualified earlier in the contest on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski. We'll have another chance for you to qualify at 8:15 a.m. today here on The Big Show. Kevin Olszewski will have your next chance at 12:15, and Hustler and Rick Ralph at 5:15 today on the afternoon ride. NHL news and notes still to come. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. 33 minutes past the hour on a Monday. And this next segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. And it is with Jets analyst here on TSN 1290, Mr. Brian Munns. Morning, Munzie. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good, thank you. Day off yesterday for the team and you yourself. And, of course, a couple days off for the Jets. We'll get into that a little bit. But first, start with your impressions from the 4-3 win over the Minnesota Wild on Friday.
Well, I think first and foremost, it was good to see them get back to that game that we kind of got used to watching them play when they won that really long three-game winning streak that had everybody excited. Obviously, the Columbus game didn't go very well at all, giving up the four goals in the second period. But, you know, to have the Wild come back and take the lead, you didn't see a lot of panic. They just kind of kept what they needed to do. And the goal that Patrick Laine scored in the second period with about 33 seconds to go was huge. And their drivers led. You know, their top players were the best players on the ice for the Winnipeg Jets when they were able to wrap up the homestand. And 4 out of 6 points is big for the team now as they get ready for a couple of games later on this week on the road.
In the day and age when things like this are so much on the forefront here, Munzie, how in the hell that Stewart hit on Morrissey let go?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. And, you know, it's disappointing to see because that was a pretty dangerous hit that could have done a lot of damage, especially in, you know, you try not to take the size of players into the equation, but how big Chris Stewart is and what a good start to the season he's had, I was kind of surprised that he finished through on the check, but whether it's momentum or whatever it was, you know, fortunately enough for Josh, he was okay, and he was on the ice on Saturday for practice, so fortunately on the occasion there that he was okay, but I agree with you. It should have been a penalty that the NHL was taking a look at for sure.
Connor Hellebuyck continues to roll, gets his fourth win of the year against Minnesota, and literally even just hearing him again post-game where he's like, well, I didn't like the second goal. I'd like to have that one back, but overall, you know, the effort, he just seems more, I say, confident, but also maybe relaxed this year.
Yeah, I think the pressure is kind of off Connor right now because everybody coming into this year, and myself included, looked at it that, you know, Steve Mason is the starting goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets. He's the guy with all the experience, and, you know, Connor got some games last year to see what it took to play in the league, but everybody didn't consider him to really be the savior for this club moving forward, and I think Connor kind of took that to heart where it was a bit of a challenge for him that, hey, I still want to be the guy here in the foreseeable future, and right now, you know, you've got to say that it's his ball to run with here for a while because he's been so good. But I think just going through everything that he went through last year was a big bonus for him. And he's got confidence right now. It started in the preseason. He played extremely well. And then to have the early success in the regular season that he has had is a really good thing for not only him but the organization, because they've played well in front of him, but he deserves a lot of credit for the way that he's battled and what he's been able to do in net here for the four games that he's been able to win here most recently.
A huge, and I think surprising, probably for a lot of Jets fans, statement by Paul Maurice having Brendan Lemieux on late in the game to protect that one goal lead, mm-hmm. but I guess that speaks volumes on what Coach Maurice thinks about Lemieux's game.
Yeah, I think you're bang on, Troy. He had a really good first impression, and again, we got to remind everybody, including ourselves, that it was only one game. But to me, Brendan Lemieux gets the game for sure on Thursday night to show what he can do again. He brings that, and I think Brendan put it best, he brings that sandpaper to the game that a lot of the bottom six guys haven't done, with the exception of Tanev, Lowry, and Mathias when they've been in, is they've had, or at least Brendan had, the Minnesota Wild kind of heads on a swivel. Like, they didn't know exactly where he was and what he was going to do because he's got that experience of being in the American League and in the preseason that he played a lot of games against many, and I talked to a few of the Wild players at the morning skate, and they did bring his name up saying, oh yeah, we heard Lemieux play in his first game, so they knew what was coming on the other side. He's got the reputation from his dad, and I think that's a good thing for Winnipeg, and you know, if Brendan plays the way he did coming up here this week like he did in that first game against the Wild here on Friday, that you know, he might just stick around here for a little bit because he's got that edge. And also the other thing, again, you watch him on Saturday at practice, he shoots the puck harder than you think he does. He's got a really heavy shot. So if he can kind of put all this thing together right now and kind of grab one of these jobs, the door is open right now for a roster spot here as of yet.
Players and coaches probably looking forward to a week of practice because they didn't get much of that last year. And really, is that what the focus is going to be, Brian, as guys get healthier, continuing to figure out this bottom six and also who plays will be based on performance more so than in the past?
Yeah, it kind of feels like you're in training camp again. With you know, to me right now, Sean Mathias, Adam Lowry, Brandon Tanev have locked up a bottom nine spot. Or a bottom six spot, pardon me, third line, fourth line. And then now all of a sudden you've got Brendan Lemieux in the equation, and you've got two other roster spots for a boatload of players right now to show what they can do. And Matt Hendricks is healthy now. He skated on Saturday, so where does he draw in? The next couple of days of practice I think are going to be very big for a lot of these players to show who should be in the lineup and who's going to be on this roster, for that matter, when we head on the plane here on Wednesday.
If you had to push your chips one way or the other, would you say that at this point, Kyle Connor, it's a stick-and-stay situation? It looks pretty comfortable.
Yeah, I think Kyle's done a good job. I think, especially with the injury right now to Matthew Perreault, and hey, let's be honest, he made a world-class play on the game-winning goal when he was able to set up Blake Wheeler on that pass, and that's going to be in the memory books for a long time for a lot of people here. So I think right now he just needs to continue to do what he has done, And I think it's kind of, Troy, like we talked about with Connor Hellebuyck a little bit right now, the pressure's kind of off Kyle because he knows that Maddie's going to be out here for a little while, so he doesn't have to go out each and every night and say, okay, I'm probably going back down tomorrow because that guy's healthy and this is my one chance, so I can't make a mistake. For me right now, Kyle Connor can just go out and play his game, and I think he's done a pretty good job here with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler.
So going into this Thursday-Friday tilt, goaltending-wise, does Steve Mason get one of those games, I would presume, going back-to-back in your mind?
I would assume he would, but in saying that, the schedule does kind of work its way where it does get busy, but it's not like you're flying all over the world. Like, literally, the Pittsburgh to Columbus flight's about 25 minutes. You're up and down. It's closer than Edmonton and Calgary are, so if depending how busy that first game is against the Penguins, and you would assume it'll be busy with the way Pittsburgh brings the offense against Winnipeg each and every time we're in that building, you know, I would assume that Connor would get the first game and you'd go back with Steve Mason against the Blue Jackets. But, hey, if Connor plays well and the goaltending tandem just kind of feels that that they can go with Hellebuyck on a little bit of a run here and Connor feels good himself, then I would probably run with him a little bit right now because he's had that hot hand. And, you know, for the first time last night, I took a look at the Central Division standings, and, you know, it's early. We all know that. But, boy, you've got teams right there that are on a roll to start the season here, and you really can't afford to fall too far behind this early. So I think you run with the hot guy for a while and try and bank as many points as you can here early in the season, just like a lot of those teams ahead of them have surprisingly done already.
Munsey, there was a play in the second period where Cullen tips the puck around Tyler Myers, and Tyler Myers completely interferes with him, but there's no call. And I've noticed in a bunch of the games across the NHL this year, I don't know if it's because of the slashing being called more tightly or not, but the league seems to be letting a lot of interference go. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I noticed that same play as well. I don't know, to be honest with you. Just based on the fact that we're only seven games into it right now, I don't know if I'd go into specifics of saying this is something you can do and this is something you can't do. I think it might just be ebbs and flows of the game and maybe even what officials see and don't see for that matter and what they decide they're going to call at that point of a game depending on what's happening on the entire ice surface itself and how the two teams are playing it. Other than the Stuart Morrissey hit, I thought it was a pretty good, solid game between both teams that, you know, not a lot of players were stepping on the boundaries that the referees thought, okay, we got to grab a team here for a couple of minutes and try to reel them back in. So I think a lot of it's just going to kind of depend on where the red line is for a lot of these players and how much of it they're trying to step on and how much they're playing within kind of the boundaries of what the officials feel is a safe game for everybody involved.
Brian Munch, Jets analyst, joining us on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour this morning, TSN 1290, 43 minutes past the hour. You look at the goaltending situation in Las Vegas. You look at the goaltending backup situation in Pittsburgh with Antti Niemi. Is there a market for Michael Hutchinson in your mind?
Well, you've got to think that they'd be a little bit curious right now. I heard the news about Subban over the weekend, and I just kind of chuckled because I felt horrible for Calvin Pickard with the way everything went down with him. You know, Vegas selects him first in the expansion draft. I saw him quite a bit over the summer, just at different charity events because he's back here. He spends his summer and he does so much for the community. And he was the guy that was flying back and forth like crazy to Vegas doing a lot of PR stuff down there. And then they decide to get rid of him. You know, I didn't think they handled that well at all. And, you know, Calvin probably gets a little bit of a chuckle here that that the goaltending scenario goes the way that it does right now for Vegas. But you know what? I wouldn't be surprised that there's some kind of a small conversation anyway as to what the Jets may want for Michael Hutchinson or even for Hutchinson's agent to reach out and say, hey, you know, what are you guys looking at right now inside the system there? So I think for Michael Hutchinson, at least from my standpoint, it's kind of become forgotten a little bit here with how well Connor Hellebuyck has come out of the gate, and you don't focus as much on what the Moose are doing. But now that you bring it up, I think that would be a scenario there for across the league for Michael to hopefully get something here sooner than later. But from the reports that I've had, you know, I saw some of the Moose guys early in the week out at Iceplex for practice, and Hutch has fit in really good there, and he and Eric Comrie have a nice little relationship. So from Michael's standpoint, hopefully he does get another chance in the NHL, but from a Winnipeg standpoint, it still provides that really good depth and net that, as you see right now with Vegas, you need some goalies because sometimes your guys go down.
Yeah, and that's what I was wondering, if they would be willing to deal him more so than maybe in years past.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the double-edged sword that you look at, right?
Yeah.
You know, how much do you want to have a full cupboard here and start emptying it, and then all of a sudden you need to open that door and there's nothing there, right? Because, and I'm not saying there's nothing there in Eric Comrie, but, you know, you've got that extra piece right now that can be big for your club. So, you know, it's kind of one of those wait-and-see things right now, is to see how this whole thing plays out. And at the end of the day, what Chevy can get for him, because he's a guy that has proven that he can play sometimes, and you don't want to give away a piece like that for nothing.
Great stuff, Brian. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again on Thursday from Pittsburgh.
Have a good week, guys.
Thanks, Bunzi.
You as well. This segment, again, was a presentation of Olympic Buildings. Buildings, straightforward or complex, it's what they do best. Tour their projects at olympic-buildings.ca. NHL news and notes are next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, Jim, Troy, and Brandon, the Royal Sports Power Hour. Monday Night Football on the station tonight. Washington Redskins against the Philadelphia Eagles. Should be a good one. 7 o'clock on TSN 1290 this evening. NHL news and notes time, gentlemen. And we'll just start with that conversation we had with Brian Mons. Do you think there's a market for Michael Hutchinson?
I think that there would be a massive glut of light goalies to Michael Hutchinson, specifically for the situation in Vegas, as you're implying. I think it would be a...
Like who, though?
Well, I would... Dude, can you go through... Can you actually go through the secondary goaltenders in each organization and speak of them with any real knowledge?
Yeah,
you don't think that they exist? Guys that have been in and out of the league for X number of games?
To me, every organization is holding on to three goalies. They're holding on to their two in the National Hockey League and one in the American Hockey League. So I don't know how much depth, when you're looking at a fourth goaltender in the National Hockey League, you have than a guy who's actually started some games and won some games in the National Hockey League, like Michael Hutchinson. Calvin Pickard would be one, for sure. But also, the Antti Niemi situation.
I was going to say, I look at this...
They need somebody.
I look at this more... I don't know what Vegas is going to do exactly, but I don't think they fit the same sort of bill as Pittsburgh, especially because I know Fleury has a concussion, but you know, those aren't generally 2, 3, 4 week sorts of things, so they might just kind of try and ride the storm with this Oscar Danskin and then move with Fleury after that. But Pittsburgh, my goodness. Like, Antti Niemi is going to go if they're smart, go the Marty Baron route, where he might just have to retire. He can't play goalie in the NHL. I think Pittsburgh is undefeated without Niemi in net.
I was watching Hockey Night in Canada, and even Kelly Rudy said, I think he's played his last game in the National Hockey League. Like that, he will not play another game in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, I mean, Hutchinson is a massive upgrade for Pittsburgh. So if they're not going to give, I know they have Tristan Jarry in the minors. If they're not going to give him a chance, they would have, I mean, Hutchinson would be, that would be a pretty decent fit. I don't think you're going to get much for Hutch in a trade anyways, but for Pittsburgh to make that move, that would be something that I would be surprised if they didn't take a look at Michael Hutchinson.
And I'm not sitting here going, you're going to get a bottom six guy and something else for him. So I think probably maybe a draft pick or maybe a forward that they want to unload, depending on what the Jets want. But I'm very interested in this. I mean, this is a season where we've seen Calvin Pickard traded. We've seen Subban picked up on waivers. And there's still some goaltending needs out there. And I think Eric Comrie needs to start in the American Hockey League. I think Phillips could use some American Hockey League seasoning. I think Michael Hutchinson, with a one-year deal left, would be a commodity some people would be at least asking about.
Comrie off to a rough start this year with the Moose, huh? from a numbers perspective anyway. 889 in three games. I know it's early.
Yeah, not ideal, but kind of tough to say this early on.
Just early, and you, another situation where you want to get off on the right foot sort of thing.
Calgary Flames have put Jaromir Jagr on injured reserve after he suffered a lower body injury Saturday against the Minnesota Wild, and the Toronto Maple Leafs have signed Roman Polak to a one-year, $1.1 million deal. The Leafs lost in Ottawa, but they continue to roll, of course. But this defense they're doing it with is far inferior, in my mind anyways, to like something the Jets are rolling out. But yet, still, the Toronto Maple Leafs are 6-2.
High event hockey, right? Like they create so many opportunities and all the rest of it, and just sort of do what they can to keep the puck out of their zone. And the Jagr thing is it? Do you guys get a feeling that it's maybe a little bit sad-ish? Like it's seeing him out there, and you know, once he gets the puck, it's all good, right? And they keep it down low, and he's had a couple opportunities and stuff like that. But you just kind of wonder where he's at when he arrived in Calgary. One of the surprising things to me was that he said, you know, I'm not ready. The time that he needed to kind of get ready, and implying that he hadn't really done much for the opportunity if and when it did arise for him to play in the NHL. The whole thing kind of got off to a strange start in Calgary.
Yeah, and the lower body injury basically points to that, right, where he pulled some kind of a muscle, and basically the worst thing that a 46-year-old man can do at this point is to try and come back from that and play at the pace that the game is at right now. I look at his face and he just looks like an old man now. I'm sorry, like he does, like he looks like he aged 10 years, and he might have aged 10 years in the off season if you have the amount of cash that Jagr has and you know some things available to you. Maybe
he
had a bit of,
man.
Yeah.
I mean, he is hockey wise, he's really old.
It's a few miles.
To me, what it seems like is there's a reason why he had a hard time finding a job. And we debated it about this team and where they would like to go with it. And I was on how I don't see it fitting, not just cap-wise, but just with the number of players you have. Are you going to play a Jaromir Jagr over some of the guys that you have here in this system? And to me, it just looks like he's very old and he's very slow right now.
Yeah, it's a speed thing for sure.
Moving around the National Hockey League, we'll take a look at the standings, of course. And what surprises you the most, whether it's Montreal at 1-6-1 in the bottom of the East, even Buffalo's 2-5-2, or if you go out west and the Edmonton Oilers sitting at 2-5 now?
Well, what surprises me the most, even with those things, it's got to be Jersey on top of the Metro. But the struggle? A lot of people thought Montreal might struggle. I don't think that people were really thinking Edmonton. A lot of people were thinking that maybe the second highest favorite to win the Cup was maybe a little bit overblown. But I'm not sure that people would think that Edmonton would be sitting second in the Pacific with the level of struggle that they've seen so far.
I'm pretty surprised at the Coyotes. I thought they would be competitive this year. You add a Derek Stepp, like a 1B type of a centerman and a top four D-man and Jalmerson and Ranta, and they're just awful right now. And it's just another case of, I guess, of a team going super, super young, and the young guys they just don't have it yet. They're just not there right away. But I thought they would at least kind of be sticking around somewhere around the playoff bubble.
8 games played in a minus 16 goal diff is that's a little
that's
scary.
Solid, yeah.
Vegas, Vancouver.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
With maybe Los Angeles, Vegas, 1-2 in the Pacific. Everyone saw that coming. I you know what? I am more surprised with Los Angeles being 6-0-1 than I am with Vegas being 6-1-0, I believe. I'm just shocked that the Kings, basically, that people were shoveling dirt on the Los Angeles Kings.
Yeah, I'm stunned. Los Angeles has 6 wins already. I literally am, and no regulation losses.
And how about that? I mean, I picked them to make the playoffs, but Dustin Brown, who was discarded
in the casket of the dirt being thrown on. Yeah,
and it was about half covered in dirt.
Yeah. Couldn't get him to Vegas fast enough.
He has 11 points in 7 games. by far the biggest individual surprise of the season.
Those are your NHL news and notes. We could keep going. There's plenty of good storylines, but we'll talk some football next. Marshall Ferguson, Ticats play-by-play man, goes around the CFL with us on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas, coming up in our next segment. Adam Kimmelman from the NHL.com is going to join us to go around the league. And we'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line. An hour of your phone calls at 9 o'clock today on the Jets and the Wild, the Bombers and the Argos, the World Series. Anything else we want to get into? Lots of storylines going around the National Football League. And by the way, we have Monday Night Football for you tonight at 7 p.m. on TSN 1290. With Washington going at it with Philadelphia. That's the Monday Nighter tonight on TSN 1290. More football talk now as we bring in Tiger Cats play-by-play man and a big part of TSN 1150 in Hamilton, Mr. Marshall Ferguson. Good morning, sir.
Guys, how are we doing?
We're doing well today and lots to talk about around the Canadian Football League as the standings in the West now become very interesting with Edmonton winning in overtime in BC, the Bombers dropping that 29-28 game to the Argos, and of course Calgary losing at home on the weekend.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that it took that much for Edmonton to get past BC. That was a really, really fun game down the stretch, but I was surprised. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but it just felt like that was a game that I honestly, if I was going to put my most confidence into a game I would have picked over the weekend, it would have been Edmonton on the road at BC, even outside of the Hamilton-Montreal game that I was calling yesterday. So, but the standings all of a sudden, yeah, they shake up a little bit. I know the Calgary Stampeders, via that win, Edmonton and BC end up becoming the first place team that's clinched in the West there. So that was kind of a given moving forward. But now you start to look at the back end and what the matchups will be in the West semifinal. It's going to get really fun really quick here down the back end of the schedule, which is what I know we're all hoping for.
Your thoughts on what Daron Carter pulled off? And I thought Matt Dunnigan brought up a great point on the panel where Chris Jones didn't try and hide him on the wide side of the field. They put him in the key position on the short side there where he knew he was going to be busy, and he seems to hold his own for the most part. And going forward, does Chris Jones dare utilize him more often in that position? Yeah.
It didn't feel like a gimmick, did it, Troy? Everybody was talking about it like it was just this dumb thing the Riders were doing to distract us from their actual point of the game, which was to try and move the ball on offense with what we thought was going to be Kevin Glenn, but ended up being Brandon Bridge. And so I was impressed by the way that Daron Carter took on that situation in-game, because we know that Daron Carter is all talk most of the time when he's on the field. And, yes, he does answer it with a lot of really good play, but he loves to be a chatterbox out there. And I thought that there was just going to be a lot of talking, a lot of him defending himself, and maybe him getting humbled, which I honestly thought going into the week was the point of him being put at that position. It wasn't that they were thin, because if you were going to put in a player on short notice to be able to take over that boundary corner position, the one franchise in the CFL that's more willing than any other to make a roster move at any moment of the week, let alone in a situation of true need at that boundary corner spot, would be the Riders, I thought. Like, if they need to fix something, they pull the trigger, they get deals done, they bring in people, or they move people from a position they already had over to that spot. So I thought it was to humble him. I thought it was a weird thing to do. I thought Saskatchewan was playing for the crossover, and they want to lose and bounce over here in the East. It's an easier path. And then they just go into Calgary and do that. And all of a sudden, looking at peaking, as we talk about for the last 18 weeks, going all the way back to the preseason about, you know, when do teams get hot? When do they feel like they can actually put a run together to win the Grey Cup? Saskatchewan, I said it to you guys earlier in the season, they're a very cocky team. They're a team that's very much out there and wants to be able to tell you they're the best and then act like it. Well, if they're the ones that believe that, that's all that matters, because you might not believe that they are the best team in the Canadian Football League, but if they think it, it's only going to fuel that ego moving forward for them. And I think that's honestly the spot that we are at right now, which is Saskatchewan has this crazy self-belief, and it's reinforced by people like Daron Carter making plays like the pick six that he had, and then Rod Peterson from CKRM screaming, "Bo Levi, shut your mouth," which I think is one of the best calls I've heard in the CFL in the last 10 years.
Marshall, how concerned are you, or how concerned should fans be with Justin Medlock?
I think very. There's been a drop-off there. It's not, you know, I asked this actually of Coach Don Salavanis, who I call games with, who's been involved in the Canadian Football League all the way back into the mid-80s, and I said, "Coach, at what point do you think the whole Medlock missing kicks becomes a thing?" because it was basically the same thing you just asked me, and Coach just said to me, it's already a thing. Like, how could it not be a thing? Because you've seen a drop-off there. He's never been, to me, an outstanding punter of the football. That's kind of acknowledged when he came in, but he is a spot-on money guy. That's why I call him Money Medlock. I mean, when he was here in Hamilton, you knew what you were getting, and he was going to be so consistent for you and so safe, and I think as soon as that starts to fall off, I don't know how you validate. I don't know if this number is correct or not, but I think when he signed in free agency, it was $185,000. And if you're going to pay somebody that much money, they need to be automatic and they need to make big-time kicks for you. And it's unfair to draw things, comparisons, all the way back to missing the kick at BC last year in the West Semi or any other situation, because we can go back as far as we want with any given player and kind of criticize them unfairly. But at some point, it's got to be automatic. And I'll honestly say this too, guys, like, think about Justin Medlock, how long he's been in this league, how consistent he's been, how good of a player he is, and how safe he feels. Well, Kenny Allen was sitting on his couch in Flint, Michigan a couple of weeks ago when Sergio Castillo tore his ACL when we were in Winnipeg there. And Kenny Allen came in, and yesterday I believe he was 4-4, 5-5, something like that. He was 3-3 on extra points. And it's like, okay, if you take the name off of it and you take the prestige of that name or the big story surrounding that name, and all of a sudden you just say, yeah, one kicker missed a bunch of kicks and didn't look all that great, missed one at a critical point in the game, and the other kicker went 5-5 and hit all his extra points, which person do you think it was? Everybody would go, well, obviously Medlock is the guy that went 5-5 or 4-4 and hit all those extra points, but he's not. And so it's one of those spots that the Bombers are in where they're going to have to make a decision on him. And if you can get the same job done for a lot cheaper, people might not like it, because I genuinely feel as though Justin Medlock is one of those names that people just enjoy having in the Canadian Football League, like a Josh Bartel or Tyler Capinha at this point, or even a Brett Maher as he's come back to the Canadian Football League. But if they can get it done for cheaper and be as successful, why wouldn't they move on?
It's on our game day broadcast, Minuk Dencher game day broadcast in here, Marshall. It's always I really enjoy Chris Wahlbe's perspective, like a lot of people's do, and something that he talks about often off air is that it really makes him angry how much added attention is brought to specifically the quarterback position in protecting the quarterback compared to other positions. And I'm not so sure that we've seen something that would highlight it better than trying to imagine a defensive lineman picking up a quarterback and pile driving him into the ground, like literally picking him up and a wrestling move, pile driving him head first into the ground, in very similar to what we saw Rico Murray do to 168-pound Weston Dressler. There's no way in the world, in my opinion, when you're talking player safety, that could have been a catastrophic result. That has got to be accompanied by suspension, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I'm not big on the whole suspension angle of things, but I agree with you. When it's that egregious, Troy, there's no way that you can keep that in the game. And I know that's an easy take, but it's the right one for both of us to have, and it's the right one for anybody who cares about Canadian football. Like, I keep going back and watching games that are being played in college. I'm going to watch my high school in Kingston, Ontario play this Thursday night under the lights. And when I think about where football is going in this country, the development that it is going through right now, there needs to be an emphasis on this stuff, not just with your words, but with your actions. And so the one-game suspension type idea right there for Rico Murray, I would not be against that. I don't even know if Rico Murray would be against it, because it's the back end of the regular season, and yeah, the Argos are fighting to be able to host an East Final, but at the same time, he's probably trying to get fresh towards that back end. So it might even be win-win. The league sends a message, Rico Murray gets fresh, and everybody can move on happy. But Weston Dressler as well is a player that is so important to what the Bombers want to do moving forward, especially if Darvin Adams is banged up and some of the other injuries that you have there on offense for the Bombers across the offensive line. So I agree with you, man. It needs to be something that we have emphasis on. And I bring up that high school game I'm going to in my hometown on Thursday, because when I go to that game, I want to be able to see parents that are having fun out at the game, that are proud that their kid is playing Canadian football. Because if you don't have that, you don't have people having fun, you don't have the game developing from a basic level, then you're not going to have the Andrew Harrises of the world a decade from now that are stars of your game, who are super talented, that are born and raised here in Canada. And so, you know, even in Hamilton this past weekend, the CFL and NFL Canada had their flag football initiative. And that was something that I wasn't in town for, because I was in Montreal calling the Alouettes game against the Tiger Cats. But I was following pretty closely, because it was fun that they were pumping out all these social videos of kids having fun and ripping around. And when I see that, there's so much conversation about concussions and pile driving players like you're talking about. But when I see kids having fun, running around, enjoying the game, and I see how much this game could grow in this country if there is more interest, and if there is a growth of interest at large because of the branding and, you know, the CFL putting out video games or whatever that might be caused by, it kind of gives me hope that I'll still be doing this in 50 years and that the game might be in an even better place than it is right now.
Marshall Ferguson joining us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 13 minutes past the hour. Montreal's 3-13. What do they do this offseason?
Oh, man. We talked to Joey Alfieri this morning on my radio show here in Hamilton to try and figure out the answer to that question. And I just keep coming back to, are we being too quick on the Montreal Alouettes? Because there's always this rush to judgment where we get out the pitchforks and the tiki torches and everything else, and we march towards Cavis Reed because he's the one who's at the helm and he's the one who's saying all of the empty statements. I do think that there's going to be some overturn in that roster in the offseason, but I always like to try and give people who are the head of an organization a little bit of time to be able to shape it before I make a judgment. Joey Alfieri basically said he doesn't understand why people are so down on Cavis Reed when I talked to him this morning, because he says Jovan Lafoy got traded for David Foucault, and Foucault isn't even a starter on the BC Lions anymore, so that wasn't a bad trade. Brian Simmons came over from Hamilton in a trade for Ethan Davis. Well, Ethan Davis is a defensive back who's not in the Canadian Football League anymore, so you've got two offensive linemen that are being able to play, even though Jovan Lafoy is on the six-game injured list right now. They're able to play when they're healthy, and they're usable for two players that you really don't care about. But the problem with this is, guys, anytime you trade for a piece here or a piece there, an offensive lineman, a backup defensive lineman, a good national rotational player like they had yesterday, saw some guys that were drafted from this past year that looked pretty good for them, and all of that's going to be overshadowed when you make the move for Darian Durant, right? Like, if the quarterback is the king, he's the story everybody cares about, and when Darian Durant comes out and as a starting quarterback takes on his 11th loss of the year yesterday as a starter this year, that puts you in a really bad spot as an organization, because how do you get yourself out from underneath a massive contract, which is what he wanted, and he goes to a spot where he just hasn't adjusted, where the offense hasn't looked good, where they've moved on from the play caller and Jacques Chatelain? I think the answer, honestly, if I was the Montreal Alouettes, is I would go young. I would really start to develop. It might not be a 1-2 year fix, but if you want to try to fix it, I'm always a fan of going young at various positions and being able to have a group that grows together. You've got good pieces. You've got B.J. Cunningham. You've got T.J. Graham that's come in there now. You've got Tyrell Sutton, Brandon Rutley. I would go run heavy, and I would go young, and I would try to reinvent myself as an offense and really give Anthony Calvillo the opportunity to sink his teeth into it, because it always feels like Anthony Calvillo is running somebody else's stuff right now.
Great stuff, Marshall. We appreciate your time as always. Enjoy your week.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Marshall.
Your next chance to qualify, and we'll try and get a hold of our fourth grand prize winner for Hockey Nights in Vegas. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Twelfth caller through, 780-1290 will be our latest qualifier as TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. Earlier this morning, we drew our fourth grand prize winner, and TSN 1290 is pumped to announce winner number four in our Hockey Nights in Vegas contest. Once again, the next person heading to Las Vegas this November is Patty Coward. Congratulations, Patty, and I believe we got Patty on the line now. Good morning, Patty.
Good morning.
How are you?
Fantastic.
Did we wake you?
No, I was in the shower when you guys called.
Oh. Mm. You couldn't answer when you were in the shower, Patty? I mean, come on.
No, I don't take my phone in there.
That is a wise move. Not only wise, but safety first. We want to congratulate you, Patty. You and a guest are off to Las Vegas, November 9th to the 13th, where you'll watch the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights on Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. Patty, we are going to give you two hockey tickets, free parking at the Winnipeg Richardson International Airport from Park and Fly, return airfare to and from Sin City, and four nights accommodation at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino, provided by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals. But we're also going to throw in $1,290 cash for any extras you'd like to take in while you're there. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. That is so freaking fabulous.
Have you ever been to Vegas?
I have been to Vegas.
And what do you usually do in Vegas? You gamble? Do you go see some shows?
We've done a little bit of both. We usually stay at the MGM, too. But it's been about 6 years since I've been there.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
And who really will you excited. Be taking?
I will be taking my husband.
Oh, that's nice.
He's a huge Jets fan.
He is, eh? Well, that's great. And having been there before, taking in some shows, doing some gambling, you'll now get to take in some National Hockey League hockey.
Oh, and that is the best part of it. The absolute best.
Awesome. Well, Patty, we congratulate you once again. I hope you and your husband have a fabulous time, which I'm sure you will. And we want to thank you very much for listening to TSN 1290. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Have fun, Patty.
Thank you.
Patty Coward is our fourth grand prize winner. We will qualify another person now, the 12th caller through, 780-1290, as we have one more grand prize draw. We're through four grand prize winners already. We have one more on Monday, November the 6th, just for qualifying. Throughout the time till then, you will get a Jetskier gift card. Mr. Ruwicki, who is our 12th caller through?
It is Mary Vandekeer.
Mary Vandekeer!
Vander!
Congratulations, Vandy. Vander! You are our latest qualifier, and just for doing so, you get a Jetskier gift card. Stay tuned to our social media, especially our TSN 1290 Facebook page. We'll be qualifying people online, and your next chance to qualify today is at 12:15 on the Don Vito Roundtable with Kevin Olszewski, and then again on the afternoon ride with Hustler and Rick Ralph at 5:15 p.m. Patty Coward, our latest grand prize winner, off to Sin City with her husband and taking the Vegas Golden Knights and the Winnipeg Jets. That's not too far away now. It's coming up.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think the Vegas record will be by the time the Jets get there? 10-1?
I was going to say, yeah, 12-1.
That'd be interesting.
They're impressive. They're impressive, man.
It's kind of fun. And especially for an expansion team, like it kind of feels like it could go, like if you get off to the bad start, your season's probably over. But if you get off to a start like this, you just kind of wonder if they could ride this a lot longer than a lot of us maybe anticipate. I don't know.
You get off to a start like this, it's definitely going to make things interesting going forward. Whereas the opposite of that is if you don't, people go, well, and it's an expansion team and blah, blah, blah. But it's a great start for the Vegas Golden Knights.
29th from a possession standpoint, 5-on-5 within one goal.
Of course he's dead. Give it up.
Of course he's over. Died a slow death. Let's talk Jets now. And a clip from Paul Maurice. The team practiced on Saturday. They took yesterday off, and they'll get back at it today. I know Paul Maurice was discussing the game Friday, the 4-3 win over Minnesota, and some of the things that went right for the team and some of the things that went wrong. What do we have for ourselves, Mr. Ruwicki? What do you recommend?
Should we maybe talk a little bit about Patrick Laine? I know Paul Maurice had a couple clips about his goal and what he was able to do.
Two goals. One was interesting because it was a little off balance, but it was still a heater.
And that's what Maurice kind of touches on here with the first goal.
Here we go.
No, when we slowed that down, it's almost like he's digging it, right? But it comes off his stick with so much heat. It's a big piece of why he's just different than everybody else. He can get a shot to the net with a lot of pace to that shot from anywhere on his body.
It was beauty.
Those two goals. And then the second one, the absolute rifle. Just a bullet.
And even if it climbed the stick or went and deflected off a Koivu stick, there was one slow motion shot. It was still hard to see the puck. So it was pretty impressive stuff, yeah.
And Paul Maurice talked on Laine's game as a whole.
He was quicker for sure, right from the early part of his game. So much of the final act of finishing a play or the offense that we really like to see doesn't come from great finish. It comes from the start where you have speed and you've generated a gap. You know, you've created an extra foot of ice to play on by something that's happened 5-10 seconds earlier, the chaos that's created by playing simple and playing fast.
I was exponentially more blown away or impressed by Nikolaj Ehlers in the game, though.
Well, I was going to ask you about Laine's game. Like, four goals, 6 points in seven games, a couple offensive zone turnovers, a couple turnovers on the power play. But overall, how do you think he started the season?
Yeah, I don't have a problem with offensive zone turnovers. Yeah, unless it's a defenseman at the blue line, that's a different deal. But when you're talking about the forwards up there trying to do something, I'm okay with it. I think Laine's look good. No, I just think it's having him out there with Ehlers 5-on-5 is a good thing. I don't think you're going to go wrong with that. And the whole when I watch this game, guys, even with the power play and the level of success that they enjoyed on this specific game with the power play, it just I still don't understand. And I would love to have it explained to me like I was 5 years old how, like, if Ehlers was on that number one power play, creating space and all the things that he does, like, why are you holding off your most dynamic playmaker off of that first team power play? That is only going to enhance what ultimately Patrick Laine accomplishes on it.
Well, here's a couple conversations I had on Friday amongst ourselves in press row. Is, you know, Nick Batan gets an opportunity on the first power play,
And people always keep saying, well, opportunity, opportunity, opportunity. Well, how do you think that goes over with Nick Ehlers? Like, I mean, here's an opportunity for Nick Batan again on the number one power play unit, and you got a guy like Ehlers playing the second one. You can't say that he's not been given some guys some opportunity in head coach Paul Maurice.
It makes zero sense to me. I just, whether it's zone entry or it's brilliance in the offensive zone for creating space and finding passing, like all the, he is your most dynamic playmaker. I don't think, is there a debate about that? Like what can I be missing to not have Ehlers on your top power play? And I think, and sure, they were 2 for 3, it was great. But how much better long-term is your power play going to be if your best dynamic player is on there? And also, no question about it, your best zone entry guy.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of is that Blake Wheeler's your half-wall guy on the right side. That would be Ehlers' spot, and they're just not willing to make some sort of a switch in that regard.
And is that because of seniority? Well,
to be fair, Wheeler has done a pretty good job of setting line A up, you know, a number of times on the power play. I don't know. I agree. I think at some point we're going to see Nikolai Ehlers become a fixture on that first power play unit, and it'll probably stay that way for the remainder of the season. One thing with line A's game, though, that is a real, real encouraging sign for Jets fans is he's shooting the puck so much more. And I think he's tops in the league in shot attempts so far, and he's at just under 4 a game. Whereas last year, that he was just nowhere near that. And if he continues to get around 4 shots a game, and even if his save or shooting percentage is at 16, which feels kind of low for him, mm-hmm. You know what I mean. But like, even if it stays somewhere in that regards, he's going to break 40 without really breaking a sweat either.
Well, you got to take a break. We'll talk more hockey with Adam Kimmelman from the NHL.com next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, a half an hour away from your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line. Lots to get to. The Jets beat the Wild Friday 4-3. They head to Pittsburgh Thursday, Columbus Friday, back home Sunday against the two-time Stanley Cup champion Pittsburgh Penguins as well. We'll get your thoughts on the game and the team being 4-3. The Blue Bombers lost to the Argos 29-28. We'll get your thoughts on that. We'll get your thoughts on Justin Medlock. They host the BC Lions. And we actually have a pair of tickets to that game coming up later on in the program as well. Stay tuned for that. The World Series is set. Who do you like there? Anything and everything coming up on the Boss Pizza fan line. We'll tee that up for you a little bit more in the next segment as well. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. Congratulations to Patty Coward once again, our latest winner in Hockey Nights in Vegas, our fourth grand prize winner. So she'll be going down to Sin City with her husband and take in the Golden Knights and the Jets on November the 10th. And, of course, four nights accommodations at the MGM Grand and $1,290 in cash. Lots of extras in that package as well. We'll qualify somebody again at 12:15 here on TSN 1290 and 5:15 as well, as we will make our fifth and final grand prize draw on November the 6th. Right now we're going to talk some more NHL, and we're going to do so with our friend Adam Kimmelman from the NHL.com. Adam, how are you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. Lots to get to around the National Hockey League, but it sort of struck me with the struggles of Antti Niemi and the goaltending situation in Vegas, if there's a need for goaltenders right now and if the Jets would be willing to deal Michael Hutchinson, who's in the American Hockey League. What do you think of the goaltending market across the National Hockey League, and will there be some movement in the next week or two in your mind?
You'd like to think so, but the history has shown that, you know, the early parts of the season, it's tough to make trades. Teams are very unwilling to move players that they think they could need later on. Depth is such an important facet to having a quality team, a championship level team, because you never know when injuries, when illness are going to strike. You never know when, you know, you think you'd be sitting pretty with 8-9 defensemen, and then all of a sudden one guy goes down, two guys go down, three guys go down, and you're dipping deep into the American League for bodies and know, that guy you trade away because, well, we got a surplus, we're good. Suddenly you turn around a week and a half later, you're thinking, oh boy, what happened to all this quality depth we had? So, you know, and it's no different for goaltenders, you know, it's such a difficult commodity to find. Teams are very hesitant to move when they've got one or two or three that they think could play in a pinch. You never can have too many, so it'll be interesting. I'm sure, you know, if Vegas or any other team feels they need to get something for that position, they're probably going to have to overpay at this point in the season to get it.
He's loved here in Winnipeg, Adam. 8 games into his NHL career. Please tell us what you think of Nolan Patrick so far.
I think he's done well. I don't think he stood out by any means, but I think he's given the Flyers sort of what they expected. You know, he's been a solid presence in all three zones. You know, I think he's still finding his way through, you know, how he can play his game at the NHL level. I think, you know, his skating, he's not going to blow anybody away with his blazing speed, and the Flyers like to play a very high-paced, up-tempo game. I think he's still trying to catch up to that a little bit. But you see what happens when they get possession in the offensive zone. You go back a couple of nights, and he made that unbelievable backhand pass between his skates to Dale Weiss for a goal. I think it was in the game against Florida. You know, that's the kind of skill level that he has. He's done very well in the defensive aspects of the game. His faceoffs have gotten better since training camp, when it was really a struggle for him through the postseason or preseason. I'm sorry, when he didn't really do well. But as the game's gone on, you've seen him get better and more confident in that part of the game. I think what you'll see is, as the season goes on, I think there's some build to his game. I think he's gaining and growing, and I think that's going to be a continued thing. And I think by the end of the season, you're going to see a much different player, assuming, you know, he stays healthy. I think the Flyers are very happy. I've spoken to Ron Hextall. He said he's real happy with what he's seen from Patrick so far, and the team's winning. So, you know, you put all that together, and he's a guy who has carved out a solid spot and some quality ice time on this team.
Adam, what are your thoughts on the Flyers? 5-3, 10 points, 1 point behind Pittsburgh, 2 points behind New Jersey in the Metropolitan, but a plus 10 in goal differential compared to the Penguins, who are minus 9. Your impressions of the Flyers through the first 8 games of the season?
Well, I think the thing that really stands out is the speed that they play the game. You know, they are a significantly faster team with the roster changes that they've had, especially on the fourth line. You know, last year, you know, Pierre-Édouard Bellemare and Chris Vandevelde, and they had a rotating cast as the third guy on that line between Matt Reed and Colin McDonald and a couple other guys that they put on there, Roman Lubomov. And it was just there to kind of take up some ice time and let the other three guys in the other three lines take a breather and kill some penalties. But now they put that fourth line out there with Scott Laughton and Taylor Lear and Michael Roffel, and it just goes and attacks and creates energy and creates scoring chances, and then it just rolls through all four forward lines. They're so much faster. You know, moving Claude Giroux to the wing has really, you know, been a benefit. It's allowed Valtteri Filppula to stay in the middle where he's at his best. It's allowed Patrick to stay in the middle where he's at his best. It's allowed Scott Laughton to really blossom in his role as that fourth line center. You know, just the way they play the game, the way they attack other teams, you've seen it. You know, they ran Washington out of the building on a last Saturday in Philadelphia. They played, you know, they ran Florida out of the building. When Nashville pushed the pace, they stayed right with Nashville, which plays the game at a really high tempo. You know, when Edmonton pushed, they pushed right back with them. You know, they've really been impressive, more so than I think a lot of people really realize they could be. You see Travis Konechny, and it just every time he gets the puck, it's like he's been shot out of a cannon. And he was a pretty solid skater, fast skater last year. He looks a lot quicker now. You know, the same thing can be said for a lot of guys on that team. Claude Giroux, it's amazing what some health can do for a guy. He's finally healthy. And you see on the back end, Shane Gostisbehere, same thing. He's healthy. He's moving the puck. He's skating better than he was at any point last season. And they just look like a better, faster team in all facets of the game.
Most, if you say the Devils, would scoff over the last few years. Adam, is it time people's perspective of just who and what the Devils are change?
I think it's going to be really interesting to see how they handle, you know, these upcoming games without Corey Schneider. You know, teams are sort of starting to build a book on them. They played 8-9 games, and, you know, whatever guys were able to sneak up on, they were able to sneak up on, you know, that's not going to be really, it's going to be a lot harder for them to sneak up on teams and to, you know, take advantage of some newer players that maybe guys hadn't seen or hadn't seen in different roles. You know, Nico Hischier has been great. You know, the first pick of the 2017 draft, he has very quickly become their number one center and their best offensive performer. That line with Taylor Hall and Drew Stafford has been outstanding thus far. You know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how they handle moving forward. Schneider's such a good goalie. Even though the numbers maybe weren't where they should be or where we're used to seeing them, he's still capable of winning games. They've got a big Western Conference road trip coming up to Vancouver, to Edmonton, to Calgary. You know, Keith Kincaid is, they're going to really ask a lot of him here moving forward. It's going to be really interesting to see if they're able to maintain this high pace that they started at. Can they keep it going here with a tough road trip coming up?
Adam Kimmelman from the NHL.com joining us this morning on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, 42 minutes past the hour. Adam, what else has surprised you throughout this start to the NHL season, especially out west here?
You know, I hate to be one of those people where I'm looking at the bottom of the standings, but, you know, Edmonton was a team that I really thought would be a legitimate Stanley Cup contender, and right now, you know, if they're closer to the bottom of the conference standings than they are the top. San Jose as well, you know, you thought those teams would be right in the mix there, but they're kind of way on the outside looking in. You know, really, that's kind of been the biggest surprise to me. And I mean, obviously, you take Vegas out of the equation. I don't think anybody, you know, expected them to win 6 out of 7 at the start of their existence. But they have been a wonderful story so far. But, you know, Edmonton, without Draisaitl there, you really see the lack of offensive depth they have behind that top line with McDavid. And you know, Yamamoto has been very good there, and Lucic. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised they've struggled the way they've struggled. But, you know, the parity in the league, and there's so many solid teams that, you know, teams are able to get off to these quick starts. They're able to build a foundation that can carry them moving forward here. So it's been fun to watch. You know, you see Colorado has looked improved. Even Vancouver has looked improved. Dallas has been better. You know, Winnipeg is in that mix, but I think a lot of people thought they would be in the mix for a wild card spot. I certainly did, at least. So it's been fun from that aspect to watch, and I think it's hard to really make judgments now. We're not even at Halloween yet. I think there's a lot more, you know, topsy-turviness. I don't know if that's a term, but there's a lot more that's gonna come. There's a long season ahead of us, so I think the standings, if you ask me, November 23rd, I think they'll look a little bit different than they do on October 23rd.
A lot of people thought Buffalo might be able to put something together and make some noise this year. Adam, are you surprised by their slow start?
I think they're still adjusting to a new coach and a new style of play. Phil Housley wants them playing a little bit differently than they maybe have in the past. And you know, they've added a couple of new pieces, and they're still trying to find their way. I think they're still a work in progress. There's certainly talent there. You know, you can't have a team with you know, a superstar like Jack Eichel and just assume that it's not going to go anywhere ever. I think at some point they need to get a little bit more solid on the back end. Right now they're still trying to play, you know, that up tempo. They want everybody up in the play. They want the defenseman to attack, similar to what you saw in Nashville when Housley was the assistant there and he ran the defense. And I don't know if they have the players there right now to play that way. I think they just, you got to give them time to adjust and to get used to things. And I think there's more good to come out of Buffalo.
Great stuff, Adam. Always good to talk to you and get your thoughts on the NHL season. We'll do it again soon. Enjoy your day. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Thanks so much, Adam.
Adam Kimmelman, once again, from the NHL.com. We'll tee up the Boss Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and we are 9 minutes away from your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Lots to get to today, as there usually is on a Monday. 24 years ago today, Joe Carter's walk-off World Series-ending blast. Touch them all, Joe. You'll never hit a bigger home run.
Magical moment.
24 years ago today. Also was the same year the last time a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup. It's been 24 years.
That's going to go down fairly shortly.
You think so?
No doubt.
Vancouver?
No. Within 3 years, that's done.
Winnipeg?
Yeah.
Maybe.
By the way, I want to wish my cousin, Ryan Reynolds, a happy birthday today. He's 41. Congratulations, oh, Ryan. Happy birthday, buddy. Mm-hmm. All the best. Deadpool 2 is on its way.
He sent out a tweet this morning. My kids tried to surprise me for my birthday. I totally heard them coming and snuck out to start a new life somewhere else.
Zing! It's the long humor, the long side of the family. The Irish side.
The long side.
The long side. My mother's maiden, that's the side. Long.
Okay. All right.
Good
Lord. Just thought I'd ask.
Anyways. Happy birthday, Ryan. Don't be afraid to return a phone call once in a while. Open your heart for your family. Jets beat the Wild 4-3 on Friday night. They improved the record to 4-3. Connor Hellebuyck is now 4-0 on the season. Your thoughts on the game?
Good game. It was just nice to see the guys get back to something that was acceptable, right? The nightmare of Columbus and... They kept up with the Wild. It looked good. It was a good, entertaining game. I was most blown away by the brilliance of Nikolaj Ehlers, even with those two goals by Laine, which were just brilliant in his own right, no question about it. The Stewart hit on Morrissey was just absolutely brutal. How in the hell is that not a penalty and a game misconduct, all the rest of it, ridiculous. A lot more interference I'm finding being allowed this year. There's something in the second period where Cullen chips by Myers. Myers all over him. No call. I've seen it all the time now, and it just seems like the refs are letting interference go. What else here? But the hands of Sean Matthias, I just feel bad for the cat. James Wright the second maybe here, and you'd wonder how long that's some remarkable opportunities. And the disallowed goal by Wheeler, yeah, that's a disallowed goal. I couldn't believe that there was argument about it. Right skate, twist and turns. Dubnyk can't make a save on it. But by and large, it was just nice to see the boys settle into another acceptable level of playing. And let's hope, can you guys carry this forward? Can we see six games like this in a row maybe?
Although, hey, they need to kind of have that as the bare minimum for the next three games when you have a back-to-back Pittsburgh-Columbus, right? Yeah, like that, they're going to need a basic level of defensive competency to kind of be in some of those games. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm real impressed by Kyle Connor. I have been. I just don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. It looks like, I think you said it, JT, that he's going to come up and he's going to be here to stay. And I think that's the case. So to me, when I look at this team and I guess the game in particular against Minnesota, I didn't really learn a whole lot. We've just seen the Jets kind of play like that a couple times already this season. But if they can kind of just hover around 500, whether it be, you know, two games above by the time Mathieu Perreault comes back, and then you have a third line of Adam Lowry, Mathieu Perreault, and then whatever winger you want to put beside them, then all of a sudden the top nine becomes a little bit more dangerous and maybe more so balanced. And I think that's going to be just a huge factor for the team moving forward.
Connor Hellebuyck gets his fourth win as well. Yeah, I didn't think Connor Hellebuyck would get recalled this quick, but it was because of injuries.
Kyle Connor.
But now that he is here, I don't think he's going anywhere for the rest of the season. Connor Hellebuyck, four wins in a row. And interesting hearing Brian Munns today saying even though it's a back-to-back this Thursday, Friday, it's a 25-minute flight, Pittsburgh to Columbus, and it'll be interesting to see how long or how consecutive Paul Maurice rides Connor Hellebuyck. What are your thoughts on that? What are your thoughts on the game? And what are your thoughts on the Jets being 4-3 heading into a full week of practice after a day off yesterday? The Blue Bombers lose in Toronto 29-28 and was a real chance for them to solidify a home playoff spot, but also a chance to maybe take the West in 2 weeks when they go to Calgary. Calgary lost at home to Saskatchewan. Edmonton needed overtime to beat BC. Your thoughts on the Bombers' loss to the Argos?
Well, it was a minor miracle. They were in a position to try and win the game with Medlock missing that 39-yarder. You surrender 572 yards. The defense allows Toronto that many offensive yards. That's in itself is offensive. Time of possession, 37:55. Just remarkable. The defense is the anchor here, and it's real hard. I still see them winning their home game, or maybe it's more hopeful that they win that home playoff game. But that defense, something needs to happen. Sam Hurrell registers his first tackle in the game in the fourth quarter with 7:40 left. And, hey, man, that Rico Murray body slam on Weston Dressler, that has got to be, in my opinion, a suspension. The result from that could have been catastrophic. And like we talk about in hockey, with the NHL specifically, you can't levy suspensions and things of that nature because of result. Had Weston Dressler stayed laying down on the field, I wonder how much different things might, maybe a flag would have come out. But that action was just absolutely appalling.
He should have been ejected immediately. It yep. shouldn't have even been a discussion between the referees. That's as bad as it gets in any kind of a football game. I've just never seen a complete lack of disregard for your fellow competitor's safety. But The defense is just killing this team. There's no other way to put it. They're just going to kill this team's chances of maybe pulling off an upset win against Calgary in the West Final. And Troy's right. Sam Hurrell just doesn't make plays. Your middle linebacker has to make plays out there. And to have Taylor Loeffler, your safety, consistently beat Sam Hurrell to the line of scrimmage on run plays, it's inexcusable. And they're just not going to be able to beat. Really, they're not going to be able to beat the Stampeders and find a way to slow down their offense if they meet in the playoffs.
World Series starts tomorrow night as well with the Dodgers hosting the Astros. Anything and everything on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Your call's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca, and an hour of your phone calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. You can also text your thoughts to 1290-90. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. We're talking about the Jets beating the Wild 4-3 on Friday. The Bombers losing to the Argos 29-28 on Saturday. Anything going on with the National Football League. And, of course, the Houston Astros, Dallas Keuchel, Los Angeles Dodgers, Clayton Kershaw, Game 1 of the World Series Tuesday night. Who you got? Who you got? We got two Dodgers and one Astros. We'll let you figure out who's going where. Sticking it to me! 780-1290 in the Boss Pizza fan line. Mac, you're kicking us off on a Monday morning. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. Morning, Jim. Morning, Brandon. Hello, Westwood.
Hello, Mac.
Hey, I agree with Westwood and your Ferguson guy that was on there this morning. That hit on Dressler was absolutely terrible. I couldn't believe it that a guy would actually pick a little guy like that up and slam him down.
At least a game ejection, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely a game ejection, definitely. And I don't know whether Medlock's got girl problems or what, but what's happened with old Medlock?
Yeah, I'm not sure. He's 7 of 13 now, right? 7 of his last 13. And, you know, with I'll say this much. If you're in a bit of a tricky wind, and I think that kick was into the wind, it looked to me like it was between the uprights, and as it continued on towards the uprights, that it was pushed out, like his out to the right? So, like, a little bit of a hook, and if there was a left-to-right wind, I could see, like, the wind just getting it there, but just real unfortunate, and you just kind of hope it's mandatory for the playoffs that he gets big-time back on track.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And a couple other things, guys. I don't know what, nobody really liked them, but I don't know what Tortorelli does to those guys, but I've never seen a team play like those guys play. I watched them last December in Winnipeg, and they just... They killed the Jets. I mean, they did the other night. They're just all over them. I don't know. I tell you what, I'd love to be in the dressing room to see what he says to those guys. But, boy, has he got them fired up.
Yeah, they're tuned. I'm right there with you. I love seeing teams that are completely invested and bought into what each and every responsibility of theirs is on the ice or field. That's just, it's something that's fun to watch.
Columbus is a real good hockey team, real solid hockey team. They play well. And yeah, Tortorella, I give him full credit. I thought he was done as a coach when he left Vancouver, or at least as a head coach. But I give him full credit for doing that. And he's had that sort of, you know, didn't go well in New York, didn't go well in Vancouver, went extremely well in Tampa Bay, is going extremely well in Columbus. We'll see what they can pull out. Mac, we appreciate.
Ultimately, that's the question here for the Jets, right? We keep seeing on, off with the Jets here. They don't have a chance in hell of making the playoffs if they don't get out of that. You have to have a certain level of consistency if you're going to be a playoff team, and you wonder, can they accomplish that?
Yeah, consistency.
And what's holding them back from accomplishing that?
Yeah, and to the point of consistency, though, isn't that just a bad team? Like, an inconsistent team is just a bad team? Like, I watch a fair amount of hockey, and I don't know, maybe outside of the Rangers a few games, and I mean, look at where their record is right now, but there's not really a team that's had some of the defensive ineptitude that the Jets have had, where it's, you know, just basic hockey 101 that goes completely awry in their own end.
But when you say bad team, I think when people say bad team, they tend to connect that to talent level. As opposed to when you see, when you see a team that is capable of strong play and is no shortage of talent, and then you see something that resembles absolute gong show mess, when the same team is capable of that range of play, something is wrong with the heart and soul of the team. Whether it's player-related, coaching-related, there's an inner working of trouble or disconnect going on there, and that needs to be solved or weeded out. Something needs to happen with that.
Consistency, for me, goes back to the Andrew Ladd days. That's one of the big things he used to... And I asked him, I think in year three, I'm like, how do you get that? And he goes, well, that's a million-dollar question for any team, is to consistently come out with a certain level. First of all, figure out who you are, what you do well, what your identity is, and then to do that night in, night out, along with injuries and everything else that comes into it, is to find that consistent level of play night in, night out. Mac, we appreciate the call on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Who's next?
Jonathan.
Jonathan, you're on the big show. Go ahead, sir.
Morning, guys. I hope you're having a good Monday morning.
You too.
Point that I was going to make in the last caller just jogged my memory when he brought up Tortorella is not sure if you guys heard the pre-game scrum before that Columbus game, and Brian Munns asked Tortorella, you know, his approach to the game against the Jets specifically, like asking him what he knew about the Jets, and he said, you know what, I don't know a lot about them. He goes, I know that they have speed, but he concentrated solely on his team. He wasn't playing the Jets. He was playing their system, and that didn't change from game to game. That's what I think. I've been on the fence with Paul Maurice for a long time now, and I think that's an approach that he takes, that depending on what team he's playing, he absolutely changes the entire structure of the team depending on who he's playing. And when you have a structure that changes from game to game depending on who you're playing against, there's no way that you're going to have consistency long term. I was at that game on Friday against Minnesota, and it was a total different structure game than I'd ever seen before. The Jets were dumping and chasing, giving up possession all game long, and it was just something that I noticed there's no consistency because our game plan isn't consistent. I don't know what your guys' thoughts are. I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I think this year there's that focus on defensive hockey, which, you know, I don't know about that.
I don't even think it's a focus on defensive hockey, though, JT. I think it's more raising the awareness of your responsibilities defensively, right? Which doesn't necessarily equal, like, you're not giving up things offensive to play smart defensive hockey. Right, every player on every team has defensive. When you don't have the puck, you have defensive responsibilities, and you got to fulfill them.
Well, then it's not a systems issue; it's an execution issue.
Yeah,
and we keep hearing over and over, it is a system issue. I agree with you. I think it's execution. I really do. The breakdowns I've seen have been player mistakes.
If it is execution, though, like that, so if a player is swinging wildly between consistent and inconsistent on execution, why is that happening? And is it's either the sole responsibility of the player, and maybe it is no matter what, or is that player not have enough faith in the system to adhere to it and to follow it to a T the way you see some teams do and the way some people are talking about Tortorella's impact on the Blue Jackets, where they look like they're finally they're really completely invested and tuned into what the Blue Jackets are doing from a system and a structure standpoint. Those are good, solid teams, right? You don't get wonky play by your players in and out of being invested in what the coach is handing down with systems and structure.
But see, what I've seen is the lack of it the first two games, an outstanding execution of it for a full 60 minutes against Edmonton. And as you go forward, like that,
be the norm.
That's the thing. Like that, I don't think the coaching of it, I don't think it itself changes game to game. I think it's execution that changes game to game.
And there you blame the, maybe it's you only blame the players, but also it's the coach has to appeal to the players to get them to buy into it to the degree necessary as well.
Like, and that's the thing. Like, a lot of people have told me it's, you know, it's a system, it's Maurice, it's, well, it's worked four times this year. And it hasn't worked three, and one of the three, it didn't, or two of the three, it didn't even exist execution-wise. So I don't know why it's not, like, if they were 1-6 or 1-whatever, I would sit here and go, well, maybe it's an issue. But, like, if you see them actually do it, to me, it's totally execution.
But that doesn't remove responsibility from the coach because it's the coach's job to get the execution.
And that's why I think it's not a coaching thing. I think it's part and parcel. I'm not excusing the coaches at all, and I'm not excusing the players. Like, we had that caller last week, and I said, I think it's a number of issues.
But it is the coaching. Coaches get blamed for players not executing, Jim. All the time, that's how coaches lose their jobs. The players aren't executing at a high enough level. Right?
Coaches lose their jobs when their teams don't win games.
Which happens because players aren't executing at a high enough rate.
Yes, it's the coach's job to get the players to execute. Yeah. It's the player's job to actually execute. Whom do you blame more?
That's always a question in high level sport, right? That where the even if okay, I've been in locker rooms where coaches get fired. Everyone knows in the locker room that it's our fault. Right, and everyone could like the coach, but the guys just aren't doing the job at the level necessary. But we all know where it falls. Like that, and those guys in that room with their own leadership, that they have to be the ones to take that step to deliver a more consistent battle effort night in, night out. It absolutely falls on them.
Well, and Tim Campbell from the NHL.com and formerly the Winnipeg Free Press put an article out. He was at the game Friday speaking about how the leadership, specifically Blake Wheeler, carried him through those first two games. And sort of everybody, you know, relax, but also this is unacceptable and got him to, like, his whole piece at NHL.com is the leadership of Blake Wheeler. And I kind of, whether you agree with it or not, I agree with the philosophy of to be 4-3 after the way the season started. That is somehow amongst the leadership and the players in the room to make that happen. More so than like a Paul Maurice or somebody in my mind. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line before we take a break. 780-1290, who's next?
Let's squeeze John in.
John, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, guys. A few things on the Bombers, and then you guys can discuss what you think. Timothy Flanders, is it making it that big a difference not having him in the offense? Is that affecting them a lot? And the other one is, do you agree with the... I'm thinking that the Bombers in that game, obviously the defense sucked big time. They didn't deserve to win the game. But at the end of the game, it was almost coincidental that when you hear the announcers start talking about having the Bombers slow their offense down, not to leave much time, at that point the Bombers were just pretty well had the Toronto D on their heels with that quick attack with the passing game going. They know the kicker was having his issues, and even they're kicking against the wind. Why the heck did they not run a couple more plays with the pass to move it up, especially when they did have them going that way, and bring it close enough to the point that if you do miss the field goal, the ball at least should have been able to go through the end zone, never mind issues with the kicking back and forth?
Well, when you're kicking a field goal from 39 yards, if you want the ball to travel through the end zone, then the ball needs to travel 59 yards, right? With the depth of the end zone. And if it's into the wind, depending on the wind, that's a pretty good distance. Although I understand what you're saying, because to me, if I'm going out there to kick a 39-yard field goal, we're down by a point. The biggest thing I'm thinking is I am absolutely crushing this ball. If I miss the field goal, this ball is going through the uprights. You see a lot of – and Justin Medlock, you see this all the time with him, and I compare it to playing a video game. If you play like Madden and the kickers, the way that the thing goes up real slow, your controller, and then it comes down, and the more power you want, the more sort of difficult it is to hone things in. Like, for me, that's the way I always kicked. I was always 100%. I think guys like Medlock typically kick at about 80 or 90, like, well-contained, and so they're that much more controlled. So I wonder if he was more of the mindset going out there thinking, this is a 39-yard field goal, I'm going to kick normal and put it through the uprights, right? And I wouldn't – like, that could have been what he was thinking. Though, remember that if it was into the wind, that wind, it looked to me like he hit a good kick, maybe just didn't read the wind right. And with what you're saying on using more clock, getting the ball down the field, their last couple of plays were run plays. Mike O'Shea would have huge confidence that Medlock's going to go out for a 39-yarder and get it. And it was 3rd and 6 on that play. So they ran the ball, get the ball to the 31-yard line, 32-yard line. You got to feel pretty confident if you're Mike O'Shea that Medlock's going to go out there and hit that for you.
Your kicker just has to make the kick. It's that simple. And you know what? I think Mike O'Shea nailed it perfectly. I think the execution on that final drive was to perfection. And once they got into that kind of 40-yard range, the focus has to immediately shift to, we cannot leave a second on this clock. Because honestly, if the Argos had 20 seconds, like let's say you run a couple pass plays and you're incomplete and you don't burn any time off the clock, does anyone have any faith at all that the Bombers can slow down Ricky Ray, even if it is just 20 seconds left on the clock? They had to make sure there's no time left.
Yeah. More of this discussion, more of your calls when we come back to the Big Show, 780-1290 in the Boss Pizza fan line on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Jay, you're on the program. Go ahead, Jay.
I just want to get in on the first of all, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I 100% believe it's player execution and not coaching. You can just look at the yo-yo the team has been doing so far this year. When the players play the way coach wants them to play, like the Edmonton game or the Carolina game or even the Minnesota game in the first and third period, you see what they do and how well they play, and then when the players don't do what they're supposed to do, you see how bad it can get. And, I mean, everyone, I keep hearing the stuff on Paul Maurice and everything, but if you just look at his track record, I mean, you don't get the 600 wins in the NHL without doing something right. And he did that coaching the Carolina Hurricanes and Toronto Maple Leafs, for the most part. Not top teams, but look how bad the Leafs were for so many years, and he went two winning seasons with that debacle. I guess, like, when it also comes to how he talks to the team and talks to the media, everyone says he talks real smooth and everything and whatever, and that's fine, but you can still tell he's telling the players what to do. And you look at the prime example, I'm getting really tight, and I'm trying to bring on the Bufflin thing again, but when the second period started and we're up 2 goals and he's pinching behind the mini net, it drives me nuts. When you have a 2-goal lead, no defenseman should be behind any other team's net at that point. But, I mean, he's done, people keep forgetting as well, he's 25 games above 500 with the Winnipeg Jets since coming here. And that's with a youth movement and Andre Pavlik as your goalie for most of those years. So let him do the thing. Just get the players on board, and let's get a system where the players buy in just like Ottawa players are doing, and let's see what we can do.
Thanks for the call, Jay, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Carl, you're on the Big Show. We'll get you to you before the break. Carl, go ahead.
Hey, I just got a couple comments. One about the Bombers. In the last drive, when they were getting ready to getting set up for that final kick, I noticed they ran the ball left on the previous play, and I thought that's perfect because you have a left-footed kicker. He's going to be on the left hash mark. because they have a tendency to draw. On the next play, they ran it to the right side, spotted on the right hash mark. I thought, why would you do that? Because he's going to have a tendency to pull. Sure enough, he gets out there, and now the wind might have had an impact. But from my experience, kickers have a tendency to draw the ball. I'm going to leave that with you. Next comment I want to make is, in that game between Columbus and the Jets, in the interview, I heard Tortorella, the interviewer asked him about a player he had that was complaining about his lack of ice time. Tortorella's response was, he does a lot of things well. The one thing he hasn't been doing is putting the puck in the net. I have accountability of my players. If he wants to bitch and moan about ice time, he needs to put the puck in the net. When they interviewed Maurice after the game and talked about what happened, he says his response was, I have no answers. Now, he may have answers. He may not want to talk about them, but the contrast between the two teams, the discipline between the two teams, there was a stark contrast, and the interview of the two coaches was a stark contrast. Now, get me wrong, I'm looking to fire Maurice. I like him. But I think sometimes he might be a little bit too much of a player's coach. Anyway, I'll let you guys deal with that, and I'll listen. Thanks.
We'll get to that after the break, Carl, and we'll get to more of your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. 780-1290 on The Big Show next. TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and your phone calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Quickly on Carl's comments on drawing the ball to the left for the Bombers on the last drive.
Well, different kickers, regardless of their foot, will have probably favored areas on the field, left hash, right hash, or center. I never did. But the one thing that would influence my decision and that might have played a role in this game is it looked to me like the wind was left to right. When you saw Justin Medlock hit the kick, it seemed to drift, not so much hook, but drift. He also, though, had a strange rotation, which told me he didn't strike the ball very cleanly. But if there's a left to right wind, if I'm on the right hash, my kick by the natural rotation is going to be affected much more so than if I'm on the left hash. So if I'm trying to kick a game winner and if there's a left to right wind, I want to be on the left hash because my ball is going to curve a lot less so than if it was on the right hash. So I'm not sure how much that all came into play, though, but I would promise you that Justin Medlock wouldn't be in the ear of either a special teams coach or Michael Shea telling him if he had a preference where he wanted the ball or someone would come and ask him.
And on the contrast of the comments from Tortorella to Maurice, and I'll even further this to Babcock's post-game comments daily or to Maurice's, it's just the way he is. He's just not going to do it.
Not many teams or I don't think would want their coach to speak as Tortorella does, right, and calling players out. That's atypical. That's not the norm.
I will say this. I forget who's on the post-game show, but I think what Paul Maurice says to the media and not calling players out is much different than what he says in the room. And I forget the player
guaranteed
from the Jets.
Night and day.
Yeah, who was on the post-game show, but he literally said, Paul just came in after the second period and basically told us, this is on you guys. Go get it. Like, this is, you need to execute better. Your first period was really good. Your second period was awful. It's up to you and the leadership in this room to make this happen for the third period. And I'll figure this out, but I forget who the player was on the TSN 1290 postgame show, but that's what they said, Paul said in the intermission.
Well, that's the one thing people have to come to an absolute understanding of, is that what is presented, any sport, any head coach, what's presented for public consumption is in no way whatsoever what that coach brings behind closed doors talking to the guys or the girls that he or she is a coach of. That is direct conversation, and if players need to be called out in that situation, certainly they are. All you get publicly is what you're wanted to digest and what needs to be given up. But don't ever confuse what is being offered up publicly to the media as something that you're seeing behind closed doors. And remember what he said last year to, was it Jeff Hamilton? "I'll bring you behind those doors and make you effing cry," I think was the quote, or something along those lines.
That was 2 years ago.
It is night and day. Don't ever be so naive to be confused by that.
That being said, Tortorella is a different breed. Like, he clearly, that when you hear him say that, I have no doubt that he said that to the player.
And that works and when you're winning. But if, you know, like we kind of saw in Vancouver and his ended with the Rangers, like it works when everything's going fine. But when you start dropping games, you know, that's how a coach can lose the room pretty quickly as well.
Yeah. 780-1290 in the Boss Pizza fan line. Larry's next.
Yes.
Yes, Larry, go ahead. You're on the Big Show.
Yeah. Morning, guys.
Morning.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. Well, I really wanted just to talk more about the Bombers. And
sure.
I mean, you guys are pretty well aware. I mean, I guess my concern is, and we've talked about this throughout the seasons Mike's been there, is one, is Richie Hall, whether or not he's really capable enough or he's just basically lost his mojo and time has passed him by and it's time for a new guy. And or is it the talent? Now, I know that we've talked a lot about a middle linebacker, and it's too bad, you know, we don't have Mwamba in the middle. But I'm concerned because when I look at teams like Saskatchewan, who obviously upset Calgary, and even Edmonton, even though I know for points for and against, we're a little better, but there seems to be more physicality. I know, Tyler, you know, we've got a few guys on the team, but I'm concerned about the physicality. And right now, Saskatchewan is one scary-looking team because we know, really, defense wins championships in any profession. So that's my one comment, and get your feedback on that. The other is our receivers. I don't think, looking around the league, and certainly I think it was highlighted in the Toronto game this weekend, and certainly you see it in Edmonton's receivers in the win that they had, is the physicality of the receivers. Now, I know if you look at our receivers and you look simply on size-wise, I mean, Darwin Adams is out. He's 6'2". We've got, I think, Coates is 6'3". I think that Wolarski guy, who's not even, I think he's 6'3". But other than that, we're smallish. I mean, Clarence Denmark really hasn't stood out the last few games. But when you look at guys on the Toronto team, you look at Darrell Walkers, the Bowmans, big receivers, physical receivers. And I'm concerned that, you know, we could be one and done come the playoffs.
Thanks for the call, Larry. Saskatchewan, the whole West to me is so intriguing. I think Saskatchewan could win a playoff game. I think Edmonton could win a playoff game. I think
Saskatchewan go to the Grey Cup.
Yeah.
They're in the crossover. There's no question. And I'm right there with it. That Chris Jones defense, that is a very aggressive and very physical defense. I was raving about them a number of weeks ago, just how they looked like they had caught hold and now we're starting to blossom into the team that a lot of people thought would inevitably happen once Chris Jones was acquired there. And I agree with you. The Richie Hall thing, when he was let go in Saskatchewan, it was the big thing was that there wasn't enough pressure, that they were too passive. That whole bend but don't break, horse crap sort of football statement that you hear sometimes was being thrown around a bunch, and they weren't aggressive enough. And you see all kinds of the passivity in the Bombers defense is remarkable to me at times, and even the simplicity of some of the blitzes that they bring, it's not good enough, and it's got to change. I would the two things that I will be shocked going into next year is if, you know, I like Richie Hall is an incredibly nice and good man. I've met him briefly, but I like him a lot. But this is a results driven business, and the middle linebacker has to be more impactful. And your defense that's being called can't surrender the types of yards and struggle to the degree that the Bomber defense has for this team to take the next step. That's just the fact of the matter.
And I would say this about the receivers too. If you look at the NFL, and the Patriots for years and years have had
small, quick receivers. Why? Because they run kind of that quick strike passing offense, very similar to Paul Apelles. I feel like the receivers on this team, you know, when healthy, fit what Paul Apelles wants to do in the passing game perfectly. And it, to me, it just depends on your offensive, you know, philosophy on things. But like, you have the Panthers, and the Carolina Panthers have titans at receivers, like 6'5", 6'6", guys all over the field. Why? Because they like to throw jump balls. It also doesn't work very well for them either, though, right? So yeah. I don't mind. Ideally, you want 6'2", 6'3", guys that can do a bit of everything. But with how the Bombers want to run their offense, I don't necessarily mind having, you know, some small guys in there and guys that are more adept at the slants and finding the soft spots in the zones and quick strikes.
But I do believe, man, and hey, man, you brought up Wiltarski's name, and I think from what he did in university at Minnesota, being a Canadian, 6'3", 220, he is a big boy, and I just, spidey senses are going nuts with him. As soon as he was acquired, I start reading about him. He could be an absolute stud in the making, but there's no doubt whatsoever the Bombers need a physical presence, a big guy, go grab 50-50 balls, guys that can make athletic moves. Darvin Adams is a good receiver, but I've been saying he's no Manny Arsenal. Pick your physical, watch Daron Carter play. The guys, S.J. Green, the guys that go and rip the balls out of the hands of DBs or go up in 50-50 situations, I believe that's a piece of the puzzle still missing as well.
Ideally, you want a little bit of everything if you can get it, but as long as it works. And the offense so far this year has been working. Thanks for the call, Larry, on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Steve, you're on the big show. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, guys. Just wanted to touch on the Jets and their bottom six. I personally don't think they've defined their bottom six, which is, I don't know if it's a problem or not, but if you look at... you know, so there's six spots in the bottom six. You're always going to have kind of your wily veterans will take one, and currently it's Hendricks and Matthias. So, which leaves you with basically five spots for, I'll just rifle off some names here, five spots for like 11 guys. So you got Lemieux, Lapon, Tanev, Rossovich, Connor, Kopp, Lowry, Dano, Armia, and Patan. And I don't think the Jets have defined their bottom six. Like, is it a, you know, the fourth line's like an energy line. You know, the third line's a kind of a grinder line. I don't know. What do you guys think? Have they defined their bottom six? And because one of the problems is it's almost like a carousel. There's and you know, if you play any kind of sport, you kind of want consistency. You know, that, okay, I'm going to be playing with these two guys or what have you, game in and game out. What are your thoughts on that?
Do you cut them any slack because, by all accounts, they're missing the two guys that they had slotted for playing center, whether you agree with it or not, with Lowry and Hendricks. Those were going to be their third and fourth line center. Right now, you look at, and they have two below average fourth lines. That is what the Winnipeg Jets bottom six is. And that, and when Mathieu Perreault comes back and Kyle Connor stays and he goes to the third line, like I believe all of us in this room thought that's where he should have started, they have to do a better job of spreading out the talent. At the very least, have a top nine. Right now, it's ridiculous. There's no team in the NHL that even comes close to having the disparity between the top six and bottom six.
I don't think it's set by any means.
It can't be set when none of them have a single .5-on-5. It's still an experiment. But one thing we know for sure is that if Matt Hendricks is healthy, by all accounts, and Adam Lowry for sure, those are your third and fourth line centers.
That's even maybe a better point. It's not set, and even if it was set, I don't think it would be much longer. Like they're searching for something. That's why guys are going in and out of the lineup, and they're searching for guys to step up.
Yeah, that's kind of the most unfortunate part of the whole thing is there's ice time available, right? Like if you want to play third line minutes, if you want to get over 10 minutes a game, then go out there and earn it. Like it's kind of a simple, I guess, task that they're asking the players to deliver, and nobody's stepped up to the plate just yet. And I wonder at some point, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff watching this,
you have to acquire something.
You're going to have to make a move at some point. Like it's that simple. If you're not getting, I just don't remember the last time I've seen a team that's gone this long without any sort of production. And realistically, outside of Sean Matthias getting the odd perfect scoring chance a game and just not capitalizing on it, has there been a game where you looked at and said, you know what, that line was buzzing. That line was buzzing, tons of chances, tons of opportunities, just didn't find a way to get it into the back of the net. It's not even been that.
Right? You know, yeah. There's a lot of competitive shift in the third line that stood out, and that's what stands out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, Steve. We appreciate it. More of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. It is going to be interesting whether Adam Lowry draws back in, if he's healthy enough. No word on that yet. They will practice today, and of course, Kevin Hrushevsky will have the latest on that in the Don Vito Roundtable starting at 11 o'clock. And then going forward, if Matt Hendricks is going to be in the lineup, and I really think, even though Hendricks is here and a lot of people have whatever your feelings are of that on, I still think that even that's performance-based. It's like who goes in the lineup, who plays well, and starts playing well consistently will be a part of that six. And then, you know, we're 3 weeks away from Matthew Perreault returning too, but
Paul Maurice gushed about Matt Hendricks every chance he had.
Yeah.
When Hendricks is healthy, Hendricks is going in at fourth line center, and he'll be given plenty of time to take root.
So that whole debate about who it is and stuff, I don't think it's set at all, and even if it was, I think it would be resetting after the six games we've seen, or the seven games we've seen so far this season. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. More of your calls when we return to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Kevin, you're on with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, how are you guys doing this morning?
Good, how are you?
Good, thanks. Hey, when everybody gets healthy, I know we've been down this road before, but anybody talking about throwing Buff up on that third line with Perreault and Lowry?
Nobody's ever talked about that ever.
I've talked about it.
What? Really?
Yeah, you know, with Pullman looking so good, I don't know that there's, you know, really a need to have him sit in the press box anymore.
But, you know, it isn't an indictment against the play of Buff, who's played really well, I think, since he's come back from that injury. But I'll just say this though, like when you look at we're talking about the Jets having to take something fairly profound to shake up or solidify the bottom six, and when you've got the almost the embarrassment of riches that they do on the right side, and once Kulikov gets healthy, if you're okay with Kulikov and
I guess Myers or Pullman?
Back there as your third pairing. And increase the minutes a little bit for Trouba and Myers. To me, how much right now Dustin Byfuglien is better than Tanev, Kopp, or Amia? And if you were to have the third line of Perreault, Lowry, and Byfuglien, that's a real serious third line to me. And I know Byfuglien would hate it, but when you're talking about where does the team need the very most help, I'm right there with you. Where, you know, you want to try and bring in a player? Sure, you can try and bring in a player. Or you can manage the situation as a team in that manner. And to me, it makes a lot of sense if this level of struggle continues with that bottom six.
Up there. And if he's not into it at this point, then maybe Buff's the piece that has to move to get that depth guy to play that third line so that we're nine players deep and then have our checking role with Hendricks at the center.
What stops ever moving Buff right now is not knowing what Trouba's doing in the future. That's the whole thing, right, an end to that.
And I, instead of moving Buff there, why not have him on the back end and just make a trade for a guy, whether it's a third line or a fourth? Like, I guess if you want to term it as a depth forward, like bring in some new blood there. And could you imagine how much stronger this team would be if Chevy was able to find some kind of a third-line piece? And then when Perreault comes back, you have a third line of Adam Lowry, Matthew Perreault, and
whoever
veteran third liner in the NHL. And then you still have this kind of cavalcade of players that you can kind of, I guess, make your decision, see how they play over the next couple of games. Like you would have a ton of competition for that fourth line spot. And then all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you have a top nine that is legitimately, I would say legitimately dangerous and deep.
Yeah, people know how I feel about moving Buff. I can't believe we're actually having these conversations again at this point of where the Jets are. And I like them. That's why I floated Michael Hutchinson's name out there. If you can go get a fourth-line guy even, I think that's worth a trade.
I just, boy, I don't know that we've seen goalies like Hutch get traded and what little comes back. Like, you're not going to get a fourth-line guy that
you'd
can step
in another
place.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but it just...
Yeah, and even if it's a pick or something, I mean, if you're going to look at doing that, that's what I would... There are teams that have needs for a goalie right now. I don't think Hutchinson's going to get you a lot, but if you can package something or go get something, because teams are interested in goalies now. And they need some answers. So thanks for the call, Kevin. Bryce, you're on the Big Show at 780-1290. Go ahead, Bryce.
Hey, guys. Just a couple things here. I also can't believe that we're even close to having a discussion about Bufflin on the third line. Last time he was on the third line in his first 16 games, he had 1 point. We put him up to defense, and then he got, I think, 6 points in 10 games. So... And that's when pretty much everyone said, all right, he's never going forward again.
He's currently a point-a-game player this year on the defense, too. He's five assists in 5 games.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a mess defensively, but that's besides the point. That's not what I'm calling. The point I'm calling for is if what we're looking forward to is Matt Hendricks coming back to our lineup, this team isn't going to get any better. And same thing for – I'm really excited to have Mathieu Perreault on the third line, but if Brandon Tanev – is that third line right winger, this team isn't getting any better. That bottom six will continue not to pot in any type of points unless it's shorthanded by some miracle again. And these archaic ideas of having someone who has absolutely no skill but all speed and no vision at whatsoever. It's like he forgets about the puck. He's a wreck out there, and he's rocking, I think, a 30 Corsi right now. He's getting shot against like crazy. He whenever he's on the ice, we're basically playing shorthanded, and it's tough to watch. And I've seen similar numbers for Matt Hendricks. I've seen similar numbers. I think it was Arctic Ice Hockey that put it out when we had first signed him that when the Edmonton Oilers played him, which he only played 42 games last season, they were getting shot against more. They're getting shot against less on a penalty kill than they were with him on the ice. So. I'm not too excited for that, but we'll see how it goes.
Okay, thanks, Bryce. We appreciate your calls.
Agree 100% with what you just said.
And man. All the calls. Well, the one thing I'll say about Matt is I haven't seen him play here yet. I know his career stats. I know everything else.
Here yet? What? I mean, it's going to be relative, man. And we saw him in preseason. He plays a great man's game, but he's slow out there, man.
We'll take more of your calls tomorrow's show on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Thanks for all the calls, all the tweets, all the thoughts as well. We have a couple things to give away today. Including a pair of tickets to the Bombers and the Lions in the last regular season home game of the season this Saturday, October 28th, 780-1290. 780-1290 will get you a pair of tickets to that. And Letterkenny is coming to Winnipeg. You're going to have to wrestle these away from Brandon Rewicki, but we'll do that. We'll give you a pair to Letterkenny at the Burton Cummings Theater as well. 780-1290. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening to The Big Show. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.